State's Skyline Studio. You're listening to The Patty Vasquez Show. We have a lot of great guests coming up tonight. We're going to check in with our friends from Emerald City. That's a little theater company that's got a production of Corduroy. So you should take your kids, too. We'll also check in with Phil Pontempo, and he's going to tell us a little bit about some of the great theater productions around the city. And Scott Stantis is going to be joining us as well, talk about all the big headlines in the news. And joining me right now in studio is John O'Malley, former U.S. Marshal, Deputy Chief of the Northern District. And I wanted him to come on because, I often talk to you, John, during really chaotic stories and violence and tragedy. And I told you before, we like to make sure we check in with you on nights when we can have a conversation about your experience and your insight on a lot of topics. You've talked to us about, you know, the things you should talk to your kids about when it comes to safety at school. And, you know, we now have these different drills. We all grew up with fire drills and, you know, hide under your desks for, you know, tornadoes and things like that. Now we have active shooter drills. And a lot of us send our kids off on field trips. And it's one thing to send them to the, you know, Field Museum or the Shedd Aquarium. It's another to send them out of town. And I said, hey, John, let's talk about this.
Absolutely. So, and coincidentally, as I told you before we went on air, in my 11-year-old's, or correction, 10-year-old's folder today was the permission slip to go to Springfield, Illinois.
Right.
Which part of me is like, is that really necessary in third grade to go to, or oh my God, I'm saying her age wrong in her grade, or fourth grade to go to Springfield.
You want to keep them young.
Yes. So yeah, they're, you know, your school, wherever your children go to school, they have a duty of care responsibility to make sure your children are safe while they're at school, during the day, at events at school.
Right.
And certainly going on field trips. And as you mentioned, it's one thing to go down to the Art Institute here in Chicago or Field Museum, which we all did.
Right.
And I just remember, you know, eighth grade was the time you actually left the city of Chicago, if you're a Chicagoan or
me too,
the suburbs. And now Springfield, Washington, D.C., there are high schools and even grade schools now going on overseas to trips.
Which is great. We want them to have these experiences.
Absolutely.
We also want them to be prepared. We also want them to be conscious of where they are and what that responsibility is.
Right. And make sure your school is taking on that responsibility seriously, which, you know, I'm sure they are. But you, as a parent, without getting, you know, way out of your swimming lane, also have the absolute right to find out what the duty of care, what plans have been put in place by the school, who's chaperoning, and, you know, what they're being told before they go on those trips.
I remember when I was in high school, my my mom and I were going to Mexico during spring break. And right across the terminal was the German club at Lane Tech. They were all going to Germany. And I thought, I mean, just that idea of traveling without your parent then with a big group just seems so crazy to me, you know? So it's something that's always, I've always kind of kept in the back of my mind, raising my sons. I pretty much have gone on every field trip except for, I've gone on every field trip. That's right. I stalked the last one, but that's a story for another day.
Sure.
So what are the kinds of questions parents should ask?
Well, again, you know, what plans has the school put in place? How many chaperones per the amount of students?
Right.
Who are the chaperones? These are all questions you have a right to ask, and you should be asking that school administration who's putting this plan together. What are the emergency plans? And I would, no matter, even if it's a grade schooler or a high schooler, you know, to create your own like little emergency card and have your son or daughter bring that with them. They don't have to wear it around their neck, but in the event of an actual emergency, somewhere on the person of your child who's the student should be all your contact information, their name, their date of birth, you know, all their basic information.
If there's any medicinal needs.
Absolutely. And it should be bright green, bright yellow, red, something that's going to stick out if any first responder was giving care to your child.
And the other reason I want to do this, and this sounds scary, I think. I don't want to instill any sort of fear, but there are parents who don't want to send their kids off, right? So this is a way for you to feel as though you are better informed.
Better informed, and exactly. And just little steps you can take. Again, you don't want to be the bulldozer or helicopter parent calling the principal and everybody, oh my God. Most of the location, I don't think they're going to send your children to an area either in the U.S. or overseas that is quote-unquote dangerous.
Right.
But in the same token, you know, don't be naive and just don't take it. Don't assume that the school has put all these measures into place to guarantee their safety and security. You know, be a little bit inquisitive.
And simple things like separating, right? Maybe a kid misses the head count. They're not where they're supposed to be. They're in the bathroom when they've, you know, slipped away after they thought they had all the kids together, ready to get on the bus. Then what do you do, right? And maybe you have a phone, maybe you don't.
Exactly. So, and are they leaving the country? So is your cell phone provider able to make calls out, you know, to back to home or whatever it is? So check, you know, just doing those things to make sure that you want them to focus on the educational aspect of the trip and having fun with their friends. Not like I used to do, you know, field trip was time to act a fool, but, you know, just taking a couple little steps. So those tips, it sounds, you know, a little over the top, but just creating that card they can stick in their pocket or have with them. And you just tell them, just carry this with you no matter where you go.
With your information.
With all your information, you know, the parents' information, as you mentioned, if they have any kind of allergies or any kind of medical condition, that those first responders, and believe me, if they saw that and something were happening, God forbid, they would be so, you know, ecstatic that information's there for them to look at. It's really helpful for the people who are going to respond to any kind of problem.
Right. And with Declan's class, you know, I used to go on a lot of his field trips, and he has a one-on-one aide. So I, you know, I'm comfortable with that, but we also need to know what kind of buses are they, you know, going to be traveling in. Because I, you know, I've gone on a lot of field trips, and that's something that's another level. Is like, are they traveling on a school bus? Are they traveling in a coach? You know, those kinds of things. I always get on the bus, take a look around, you know, have Griffin pay attention to, you know, just like when we get on a plane. When you go anywhere, you should be aware of your surroundings.
Absolutely. And that's another, you know, one more aspect is if it's a trip to Springfield and you're taking a bus, you know, ask the school, what bus company are you using?
Right.
Is it a coach bus or is it a yellow school bus or what is it? You know, and do your own due diligence to find out is that, you know, Google is an amazing tool to do some research and find out, you know, if that bus company's ever had any issues in the past. So.
Yeah, and we had an itinerary. When Griffin went off to D.C., they sent us an itinerary and they were pretty good about the schedule. And I know that because I did, in fact, follow them. I was not one. But I was doing research, John, for a screenplay about a helicopter
just
mom.
Just so happened you were in the same town.
Man, what are you guys doing here? And people were like, is that Griffin's mom? Just like darting behind the bushes. But, I mean, part of it was also I kind of wanted to be in that town with him. You know, in case something did happen. That's just me.
Yeah, and, you know, going back to when we went on field trips, Patty, some of the same issues that are present now in 2019 were not present back in my day and probably your day. So without being, you know, overly cautious, there's just a different environment now. So, you know, taking these extra steps just put, you know, you at mind. And I think the schools, as long as you're not overbearing on calling the school administration, principal, you know, the teacher of your student. I mean, I think they really, you know, appreciate the parents at least checking in and asking some questions.
We are hanging out with John O'Malley, former U.S. Marshal, Deputy Chief of the Northern District. He is our law enforcement expert and a contributor here at WGN Radio and WGN Television. And we're talking about sending our kids on field trips and overseas travel, perhaps. But maybe there are things that we should be aware of when we're traveling overseas. We'll talk about that when we come back after this break. If you have any questions or thoughts, give us a call or text at 312-981-7200. Again, that number is 312-981-7200. More in a moment on 720 WGN. Chicago Public Schools are on spring break starting tomorrow at 3:30 for my son, and that's it for a week. And a lot of families are going on vacation, maybe taking their kids someplace fun. Maybe they're just going to Disney World. Maybe they're going, you know, camping. Maybe they're going to Europe. And you know, when we traveled to London last year, I realized afterwards that there were some things that we didn't necessarily research as well as I wish we had. Like in case we got separated, we didn't necessarily have a plan. And I thought it would be interesting to talk to John O'Malley, former U.S. Marshal, Deputy Chief of the Northern District, and our law enforcement expert. I wanted to know, what do you do if you're going to travel with your kids? What kind of plans do you have in place?
Yeah, so, you know, we went to Disney World back in the fall, And again, I'm a little, I guess, out of the ordinary of most people, but I did a little research on security at Disney World because it's a potential target. And talking to some people who have information that is not generally known to the public, I found out a lot about their security is maybe not visible in Disney World, and a lot of it's underground. And they have people who are security that look like
Snow White.
Look, Mickey
sure
has an AR-15
in
his ears,
cool.
Right?
Yeah.
But they do have people who wander through the park that are actually off-duty and on-duty law enforcement that mix in with the crowd. So the safety at Disney World, as you would expect, is really high. Just traveling, that situational awareness, Patty, is so important, and you got to start ingraining it in your kids. Again, not paranoia,
right?
But just paying attention to their surroundings, and you know, if something looks out of the ordinary, to talk, you know, have your kids talk to you about it, so that you can make a determination to notify, you know, someone who should know, law enforcement. See something, say something is a, you know, it's kind of a saying that just gets lost in the mix, but it's really important. Just notify somebody, hey, something doesn't seem right over here, whatever it is, and let them know.
And it's easy to get separated, too.
Easy to get separated. You got to have a plan. So, Disney World might be, that's one destination, but if wherever you're going, your kids should know the hotel you're staying at. And this is all relative. You know, a three-year-old may not remember exactly where you're staying, but once they get into that 8, 9, 10, and then in teenage years, absolutely they should know exactly the name of the hotel, where it's at, and you should come up with a meet spot. If we get separated, go to that Starbucks that's right down the street from our hotel or that theme park we're going to be at.
Know your parents' phone number, because your phone might die or you might lose it. Write that down. We don't all know each other's phone numbers.
Absolutely, and again, going back to the field trip, same thing. You're going to Disney World, put a little, you know, go on your printer, make a little red card with everyone's information and stick it where someone be able to find it if they start asking your children who they are and what they're. They might, you know, they'll find that information, get back in contact with the parents easily.
Here's one of the dorkiest things that we do, and Steve does this more than I do. We actually just saw a picture of us from Great America coming down the log ride, and Steve, Griffin, and Declan are all wearing red shirts, and I'm not, because Steve would dress the boys like him. So in case they said, "What's he wearing?" Steve would know exactly what color shirts they were wearing.
That's a fantastic idea. Something bright, red, mm-hmm. yellow, green.
Right.
I have a whistle for my 10-year-old and my 6-year-old. And when we're in a store or, you know, when I make that whistle, they know, they look up like...
Oh, you have like a lifeguard, like your own...
Just my own whistle. Yeah. Not an actual whistle, just a...
Like that?
Yeah, it's a little, the tone is different.
What's your sound?
That was
like?
Nice. Yeah,
thank you very much. I was a lifeguard. Wait. Oh, yours is pretty. Mine's like dramatic.
Almost like a bird. So it's amazing. I'll do it at the airport. Like if I go and get drinks while they're sitting at the gate, mm-hmm. I'll whistle and just to see if they look up like
test them.
What are those little dogs that pop up out of the desert? You know what I'm talking about?
The groundhogs?
What are those little dogs that like kind of pop up? They go on their hind. I don't know if they're actually dogs, but yeah, like
meerkats.
So they do, and they, you know, I'll do it at Mariano's or Whole Foods, whatever. I'll just to see if they're paying attention. So. But just having, you know, a little family meeting. Hey, we're going on this vacation. I know teenagers are going to roll their eyes.
Yep.
But you know what? It takes all of 2 minutes to talk about it. And who cares? You're in charge, right?
Mm-hmm.
And same thing at home. Are you practicing family emergency drills at your home to get out of the house when you need to be? Or do you have a place to get to and lock yourself, shelter in place in your home? How long does it take to do that? You know, little games you can do with your kids. Like who can do it the fastest to get to that room? And, you know, get into a closet, whatever it is, and shut that door while you're on the phone with the first responder. So,
for Disney World, the other thing I bought last year was runners wear reflective, almost like safety patrol, like almost like belts. So, like almost looks like a harness, right?
Okay.
They're yellow with reflector strips on them. And I bought one for each one of us in the family, which everybody hated wearing.
Yeah, but you might be getting a little crazy.
The security folks, because Declan can't talk.
You're in a special.
Yeah, Declan can't speak, and I needed him to be able to identify us and for us, so people would know that we were together.
Hey, and again, you know, listen. Any of those things that you can do that make you stand out are fantastic. And, you know, you've been there. We were just there in the fall, and it's a fantastic place, but the crowds are sometimes unbelievable.
Yeah. Right? Oh, Oh, yeah. And you have to really, if you can't, there's anything could happen when you lose, you know, someone's hand. By the way, Christine in Bucktown says prairie dogs was what we were thinking.
Thank you. That's what I was talking about. Yes, the prairie dogs. And, you know, traveling overseas, a couple of things. One great free thing is the State Department has a program called STEP. It stands for Smart Traveler Enrollment Program. So if you're going overseas, just Google State Department STEP.
What? Okay.
And you just put in your information, your passport number, and you're going to France, Spain, and wherever on vacation or for business. You enroll, and they then know you're in country. And if there's something happening, they will get in contact with you. It makes it easier. God forbid you lose your passport or you misplace it or it gets stolen.
Wow.
You're already enrolled. They know you're in country. They know who you are. And you can be able to then get back to the U.S. safely. So another tip is take a photograph of your passport, that picture part and all your information, and then do a Xerox copy and leave that with a trusted source back at home. So if your passport gets stolen, you lose it, it makes it that much easier to get a replacement at the embassy or the whatever foreign country. And if there's a consulate or an embassy there, you know, the first thing they'll ask you, what's your passport number? I don't think anyone memorizes that. So
no,
if you have it on your phone, or you can get a hold of someone back home and get that information, it makes it that much easier for them to potentially get you a replacement.
By the way, the State Department also has an app called Smart Traveler.
Yeah, that's same.
Same program.
Part of the program.
This is great information. I didn't have that before. See, this is why we need to have you here. This kind of stuff.
Every now and then, I come up with a nugget, Patty.
we have to go to a break, but I wanted to get your thought for a moment on the apprehension. I guess the turnover of Julian Assange in London from the Ecuador embassy. What did you think about that this morning?
Well, I think it's fantastic. Now, let's see if we can actually get him back to the U.S. I can tell you how that happens.
Oh, well, boy. Well, we'll have to find out. Well, we're going to go to the theater stuff. Can you hang out for a little bit?
Sure.
All right, then. John O'Malley joins us. He is a former U.S. Marshal and Deputy Chief of the Northern District, and he is a law enforcement expert who we all rely on here at WGN when news is breaking, and a contributor at WGN Television as well. More in a moment on 720 WGN. Theater Thursday, and I'm glad that John O'Malley decided to hang out with us for a little bit. We'll talk some more safety and security issues and some international news in a little bit. Scott Santa's going to be here, too, so we can catch up with him as well. I want to tell you about a production of Corduroy that is it's going to be running at the Emerald City Theater. My apologies, Jamal Howard is in studio with us. Hey, Jamal, how are you doing?
I'm good. How are you?
I'm very good. You are the theater director over by there.
Yeah, I'm the artistic associate at Emerald City, and I directed Corduroy.
Now, tell me about this. I'm not familiar with this little bear and his button. I know I've heard the name before.
Yes.
Yes. Tell me about Corduroy.
Well, the play is based on the book by Don Freeman of the same name. Corduroy came out in 1968, so there are many generations of kids out there that know this story, and it's about this bear who has lost his button. He's a stuffed animal in a toy store, and he's looking for it so that he can go home with this little girl, Lisa, who really wants to take him home, but he has to find his button first.
Because she doesn't want a bear without a button?
Actually, it's the mom that doesn't want the bear without
Picky
a button.
Mom?
She's like, yeah, he's broken. You don't want a broken toy.
When was Corduroy written? I'm not familiar with this story.
1968.
So you're saying Toy Story stole the site. I'm kidding. Because the toys come to life when the store is closed.
Exactly. And he explores the department store and he finds everything new. He's very young at heart, and he doesn't know what his surroundings are, so he's interacting with things for the first time, and it's just delightful and so cute.
What drew you to this story for Emerald City Theater?
You know, it's really the heart of it. Yeah. Really at the heart, it's about friendship and it's about home. Oh. And that, you know, home is kind of where you are loved and that sort of feeling. And so the play has Lisa, the little girl who wants to bring him home. She's trying to convince her mom that she deserves to have him. She's responsible. And Corduroy's trying to find his button so he can have that friend that he saw at the beginning of the play. And that's pretty much it.
Again, the production of Corduroy is running Fridays at 10:30 a.m., Saturdays at 10:30 a.m. and 1 p.m., Sundays at 2, and it's running through April 20th at the Athenaeum Theater on the main stage, which is such a great space.
It's so exciting. I love that space.
And if people aren't familiar, it's over at Belmont and
It's Wellington and Southport and Lincoln.
Okay, that's what it is. Lincoln. That's what it is.
Yeah.
By the Army and Navy surplus store. I don't even know if that's still there. Is that still there, James? I've gone in there for props before.
Yeah.
For some reason, I have vests. I don't know why. But I love that area, and that theater has so much energy because there's so many things going on there.
Yeah.
Where is the Emerald City Theater home? Because you guys do productions all over, don't you?
Yeah, we do productions in a couple of different places. We also partner with Broadway in Chicago at the Broadway Playhouse and do a show down there. We have our offices in the Athenaeum Theater.
Oh, nice.
So we're on the third floor, so it's really fun to do a show. This is our first time doing a show on the main stage in the Athenaeum. And so to have it in the same building that we also call home, it just feels real good.
On the weekdays, you're getting field trips.
Yes.
And how is that going?
Oh, it's so good. If you have not been to a TYA show, a Theater for Young Audiences show, with a room full of children just enjoying that show and reacting and yelling at the stage and all of that, you haven't really lived. I don't know what you're doing. There's nothing like being surrounded by kids who are surrounded by their peers so that they don't have, you know, those fears of like, oh, I can't talk because my parents right here, my grown-ups right there, they're going to just let it all out and they're going to let you know their emotions and they're going to react honestly. And it's so good having that energy in the house.
What grades are coming to see Corduroy?
You know, really like pre-K through like first, second grade. We suggest the show for ages 3 and up. Mm-hmm. It's a very physical show. It's acrobatic. It's clowning. There's a lot of nonverbal action. So there's a lot of different types of people that can enjoy the show. It's good for a lot of different age groups.
When you decided to do Corduroy, what are some of the elements that you had to, you know, envision? Like how you were going to bring Corduroy to life?
Yeah. There's a lot of clowning. And it was like, how can we figure out how to put all these different areas of a department store on stage and make it feel real, but make it feel like you can just clown in it and anything could happen?
Right.
So honestly, you kind of start with the actors that you have. We had a great time casting this show, and we were very lucky to find an extremely talented actor named Jean Claudio, and he's playing Corduroy, and he's an acrobat, he's a clown, he can do lots of different things. He's very expressive with his face. So in a lot of ways, we started with him and thought about what can you do and what can you bring to the table? And then we had a lot of fun going back and forth. I also have, I worked with Amanda Crockett, who was my circus and movement director. And we just had a great time collaborating on this show.
It sounds like you're having a blast. How big of a cast is this?
It's 6 people.
Okay, so that's it's a nice tight group.
It's a nice tight group, and they're running around doing everything on stage.
So there are multiple roles for some of the castmates?
There are 2 actors that play these sort of clown mannequin type characters, Kelsey Shipley and Averis Anderson, and they run around the stage like creating havoc. They're sort of like the department store's like energy is what we said they were, but they they run around and they make things happen. They puppet the button. They just create a lot of tricks.
Oh, it sounds like such a blast. And you're originally from California, San Jose?
Yes, I am.
What brought you, was it theater that brought you here?
Yes, but school. Uh-huh. I went to Loyola
and got
a degree in theater and PR and advertising.
Uh-huh.
And I stayed because this is a really great theater city, and that's what I wanted to do. And I kept getting work and kept, furthering my career and got into directing even more. I did it in college, but did it even more after that, and then found myself at Emerald City.
When you're directing a project and you are, your focus is right on this production for children, mm-hmm. you have to like sort of tap into a different part of the creativity, don't you?
You do.
The energy.
But it's also, kids are still people. And they're really smart, obviously. And they pick up on anything. If anything, you have to be just even more on top of your game. Mm-hmm. You cannot let anything go past those kids.
Oh, no doubt. They're honest critics, aren't
yes.
they?
Yes. Oh, super honest.
Yeah. And you've also done work with the children's program at the Beverly Arts Center on the South Side.
Yes.
I love that place.
Oh, yeah.
It's one of the best.
Yeah. It's where I went right after college. I did a handful of years there, just constantly doing musicals, directing or choreographing them, and working in the surrounding schools, too, and teaching dance classes and theater classes and working on the school shows. And
if somebody has a child that is interested in theater, how should a parent sort of encourage them to pursue at least see if they have is it an improv class, maybe dance?
Yeah, I mean, any sort of performance art is great. Mm-hmm. At Emerald City we have classes, we have an education program, so you can go to emeraldcitytheater.com and look up our class. We have a great summer camp program that's coming up. We're gearing up for that. And what's great about those summer camp classes is that they are in 2 weeks, 2 weeks at a time.
Mm-hmm.
So if your kid is into something, they can do it for 2 weeks and see if they want to do another one. Or if that
right.
wasn't, their thing, then cool. You did it. You tried something new. We also have classes for the little ones starting at ages 3.5.
Ooh.
So, and those are half day camps, so they go until noon or so. And, it's a nice, good way to see if kids are, comfortable with it or not.
Yeah. John, have your kids gotten involved in theater?
Not really. My older ones, who are now off the payroll, they were a little bit involved in the theater, early on. And then now the second little ones are, all about sports.
Yeah, it's funny.
But very theatrical.
I was hoping my son would do a little bit of both, right? Aren't we all? When we're young, I had hoped that Griffin would be a little bit of both, sports and theater. But he knew what he like. I took him to Emerald. There was one of the kids' theater groups, and I took him to watch. And he just wasn't feeling it, and I didn't want to make him do it. Same thing with baseball. Although he played for 4 seasons because mommy loves baseball. And I knew he was doing it for me at some point. But once they start throwing harder, you got to get them out of the batter's box.
Yeah.
And sports really is, they are performing in a certain extent.
Well, yeah.
Right? I mean,
one of the things with sports and theater, it's all about communication and teamwork. Like with theater, you have to work together. Otherwise, it's never going to happen. That's why I love theater in schools and education, arts education. It's all about learning how to communicate with each other and how to problem solve, because you all have a shared goal of telling a story, or in the case of sports, winning the game. So there are a lot of similarities between the two, even though they seem like they're so opposite of each other.
We are hanging out with Jamal Howard, who is the artistic associate for the Emerald City Theater and director of the production Corduroy, which is running through April 20th, Fridays at 10:30 a.m., and then the morning Saturdays at 10:30 a.m. and 1 p.m. in the afternoon. They've got the Sunday performance at 2. You can go to emeraldcitytheater.com. That's Theatre. I just like to let people know, in case. But if you type it in, you're bound to find it.
Yep.
And it's all going to be at the Athenaeum Theater on the main stage, which is located at 2936 North South Southport Avenue. And I'm wondering, you know, when you, you know, get into rehearsals and you guys are, you know, prepping everything, you've got everything in place, you have this idea of how it's going to go. Have there been anything, you know, surprising along the way that you're like, oh, you know, that's something that once it's live, it sort of brings something different to, you know,
yeah,
to the foreground?
Yeah, I think, and probably any show that I've rehearsed,
sure,
you do it in a rehearsal room and it's great, but you're doing it for the director and the stage manager and a couple of other people, and it's just like you're in this room and you're by yourself, it feels right. like. And then when you bring the audience in, it just springs to life and you get that energy back from them and they're giving it to you, and it's just a really good time. Yeah, they're always fun times with kids in the audience. They will just shout out the randomest things or just the best. They will just viscerally react to what is happening. And in Corduroy, he's looking for his button. Right. So they're often ask or telling him, look, for the button's not there. It's over there. It's over there.
Oh,
so
no.
They're like screaming at him, trying to help him out. It's great. There's also
fantastic.
A character called the Night Watchman, who's sort of like the foil of the show. He's the villain, in quotes, of the show. And they're all screaming no at him and just laughing at him whenever he falls over. It's a good time.
Well, it sounds like you're having a blast. I encourage everyone to check out this production. Take your kids to go see Corduroy running through April 20th and go to emeraldcitytheater.com. Thank you so much for hanging out with us tonight. Love to have you back anytime.
Yeah, I would love to be
Be well out there. It's a little rainy out, so be safe. Thank you so much. People can find out about classes at the same website.
Yes, classes are at the same website.
Excellent. Thank you so much. Jamal Howard from Emerald City Theater. More in a moment on 720 WGN. Has it been 7 years since Julian Assange has been running from the authorities, John O'Malley?
Yeah, I think, like 2012, yep.
Something like that. We are in the Allstate Skyline Studios hanging out with John O'Malley, former U.S. Marshal and Deputy Chief of the Northern District and our law enforcement expert here on WGN Radio and WGN TV. I was up out when the story started breaking, and friends of mine in California were talking about how this is what happens when you're a bad guest, because apparently the Ecuadorians were fed up with him.
Yeah, I think him and his cat.
Well, not only that, but did you see that he was installing like his own electronic equipment? He had hacked into their system, and you're like, did you not learning anything?
Yeah, they basically deported him from their embassy and called the London authorities, I think, and said, "Come get this guy."
So, as somebody who is has been in law enforcement, mm-hmm. a guy like this, so some people think of him as a free press hero, right. That he shared information, you know, atrocities of war, that there were things that people needed to know, but he also seemed to do it in ways that, you know, he would pick and choose to decide, you know, what information he thought was going to benefit people he liked or didn't like.
Well, right, and listen, you know, without getting into the nitty-gritty of the case, and I don't, you know... pretend to know a lot about the actual case, but certainly freedom of the press and the right for the press here in the United States to do certain things is absolutely what keeps the country in checks and balances. But you also cannot, I don't think anyone would argue as well, is gain classified information without having the authority to get that information and then broadcast it out on the internet and through WikiLeaks and everything else. So I don't think any journalist in the right mind would argue that they should be able to hack into Department of Defense, you know, computer systems or elsewhere to get classified information and then broadcast that out. So that you know, not only steps over the lines of First Amendment rights, but it gets into criminal, territory. So
what happens next with Julian Assange?
So, you know, and again, I'm not an attorney, but I am familiar with extraditions and getting people who are classified as fugitives from in other countries back to the United States. So he'll go through the British court system, and he'll be provided with attorneys out there. He can file to say, you know, to fight this extradition. And then the United States, there would have been a provisional arrest warrant issued, which, and it goes both ways, that a country trying to get someone out of the United States back to the country has to prove some elements of that case, basically provide information to law enforcement here, and then we do the reverse to put that person, you know, to take him into arrest, to arrest that person, take him into custody. So the British courts will decide whether he has an initial court appearance and is held in custody in some type of detention until he's extradited, or they can release him pending the final ruling of the court that he is extradited back to the United States. So I would imagine the United States will, you know, plead with the British courts to hold him in custody, not release him, so that they don't have to do this all over again.
No kidding.
If he were to disappear or show up somewhere else and seek asylum. So.
Well, I don't even understand why were other countries even giving him asylum. What benefit did Ecuador, unless they wanted information that he had, they were hoping to get some of that classified info?
Yeah, I mean, I think, you know, why he chose that specific country to go to their embassy and seek that shelter, he did. They obviously agreed for quite a while and up until recently, and you know, basically had enough and put him out on the street, and where London authorities, you know, it sounds like there were some arrangements made, and they came and got him. So
because they had the bobbies out there and everything, they were ready to go.
So, and then the Department of Justice has a division called the Office of International Affairs, OIA, who will then, they'll basically be acting on behalf of the Eastern District of Virginia, where this criminal case has been filed. And then they will act as the attorneys representing the United States in the British courts. And then a termination will finally be made, whether or not. And then if he does get sent back, that information will go through DOJ OIA to the United States Marshal Service, and they'll make arrangements to go to London and bring him back directly to the Eastern District of Virginia, where this case is out of.
Well, and I guess they're also just grappling with the statute of limitations as well on some of the charges.
Well, so if the charges were so, you can't hide and hope for the statute of limitations to ride that out.
Uh-huh.
Once charges are filed, those statute of limitations stop.
Okay.
Right? So if you committed a crime and the statute of limitations 5 years, but the charges were filed within that 5 year period, and then you were on the run for 10 years, that doesn't count. It's when the files were, the alleged conduct occurred, and when the files were charged.
Before, I don't know how long you want to stay, because we've got a little more theater coming up, and then we've got some segments available to talk about some more safety stuff, so it's up to you. But I do have a listener that asks, we were talking about chaperones and field trips before I go to the break in news. Should schools require background checks for chaperones, even if the chaperone is a student's parent?
Absolutely.
I've had a tuberculosis test and a fingerprint done to do overnight, and that was going on Griffin's.
Yep, absolutely. So I can really expound on that if you want.
All right. Well, we'll come back to that in a little bit. We're talking to John O'Malley, our law enforcement expert, former U.S. Marshal, Deputy Chief of the Northern District. If you have any questions or comments throughout the evening, give us a call, 312-981-7200. You can text us to the same number. More after this.
Some tags, only got $20 in my pocket. I'm hunting, looking for a comer. This is being awesome.
It is Theater Thursday, and I've asked John O'Malley to hang out with us some more tonight as well. And we'll talk about a wide range of things. I am so thrilled that Philip Potempa reached out to me and said, "Hey, I'd love to come and talk about some productions in Chicago." I don't think you know what? I'm gonna go ahead and tell the story because I said we would talk about it some other time. But you said that the first time you saw me perform was at the Lakeshore Theater. Right. I was the opening act for the Puppetry of the Penis, and I know it's just fun to say. It's true.
That was like, wait a second, what did you just
say? That's the name of the production. It was these guys out of Australia had learned how to do some tricks with their body parts, but they only had 38 minutes of material. And they needed to, you know, to sell tickets, they needed to, you know, flesh out the show.
What?
Yeah, perfect choice of words.
So they hired, in all their tours, they started out in New York when they were here with a guy kind of warming up the crowd wearing a toga. So it was like this weird thing. But then they started hiring women as comedians to do the show before them. But I don't know if you wrote a review, because Chris Jones wrote a review. And we don't have to get into what that said. But it was, what's her name? Hetty Weiss. Here was her review of me. God, it was pert and it was God. It was like four. It was like three P's. It was predictable, loud and predictable. No, I can't remember. Oh. I used to know this. Pert and, oh, here it is. Pert and polished, if not loud and predictable. There it is. And I was so mad about that, Phil, because she couldn't find a fourth P.
That's right. So like, close. So close.
She was so close. So I don't know if you wrote a review, but I don't need to know about it.
If it was, I know it was shining.
Oh, maybe. Sure. I've come a long way. It was 15 years ago.
Can't believe it.
And what got you into writing about theater?
Well, you know, I wrote for the Times Northwest Indiana originally for 22 years, and it was just one of these things where a lot of times people will think, oh, Northwest Indiana, it's so far away, you need a passport. And just the opposite, we're so fortunate to be so close to Chicago and just a stone's throw to all this great theater, you know, this theater town. So they needed somebody to fill that capacity. So I did that for more than two decades. And then in November of 2015, left the Times as they were doing a little bit of changing and went over to the Post Tribune, which is owned by the Chicago Tribune. So Post Tribune is the rival in Northwest Indiana of the Times. And same thing, they need a capacity to make sure that there is a theater voice for everything that's happening in Northwest Indiana and Chicagoland. So I always listen to Theater Thursdays. It's one of my favorite things. And I thought, you know, it's perfect. The theaters are letting out. I can see why Patty would have this as a segment, because at 10:30, all downtown is letting out. They turn on the dial and they're hearing what you have to say.
Oh, interesting. Well, and we talked to a lot of the artists, whether it's the writers, directors, the performers, and you know, we try to highlight a lot of the storefront theaters throughout the smaller production companies. You know, all Cochrane Show and you know John Williams, they get all the Mamma Mias, which we're going to talk about. They get all those bigger, splashier shows that are in town for a few months. Sure. Whether it's the musicals, which I love going to those as well. Yes. We have such a rich theater culture here, for whether it is the bigger name things. And as I mentioned, Mamma Mia. How long has Mamma Mia been running at the Drury?
It's been there for a good 2 months already. Yeah. Believe it or not, it's gone. It's been, you know, a fantastic run for them, and it's gone quick. It closes this week on Sunday. And for anybody that says, I've seen the tours that have come through, there's a reason why it keeps getting produced, because it's all those great songs. And they really transform that stage to make it seem as though you're right there in the Greek Isle. And that says something. It's a nice nod to their scenic designer. And then the cast they have is a lot of Chicago favorites. And the names you see at the Goodman, and you see a number of other places, and you put them together. And it's a fun formula. And again, it gets people on their feet at the end for that finale.
And, you know, my husband makes fun of me because I always say I don't like musicals, and every musical I go to, I love. So I don't know what's wrong with me.
Even Cats?
Yeah, I've never seen Cats. I've never, ever seen Cats. But I've never seen a live stage version of Mamma Mia.
Oh.
I know, so I should catch that. Well, yeah. And hopefully they'll be back.
Oh, Patty, yeah. We'll just go to Santorini and, you know,
yeah, right.
We'll just live it.
That's yeah.
It.
That's yeah. It. First, you get to show me around the islands.
That's right.
Please do.
Yeah.
Now, Poseidon, the only Poseidon I've ever seen was the movie with Gene Hackman where they're all trying to get out of the boat.
Is that
the Poseidon Adventure?
So you've
the
never
musical?
Heard of this?
There's a musical.
Yeah.
Hilarious Upside Down.
This is made for you. This the Poseidon Adventure and Upside Down musical. David Serta is our Chicago. He's Chicago royalty when it comes to stage parody and camp, and he's been doing it for more than 20 years. And I like him because I have Indiana roots, and he's from Hammond, Indiana, just right over that state line. And Poseidon Adventure, I just left this. I went to it tonight.
You did?
Yeah, I'd seen it before. This is kind of their remount of it. I saw it when it first came out about 12 years ago, and thought I'd go there tonight, and then I'd come here and be ready to go splashing.
Yeah.
A musical that is a fun parody. And again, it holds up. It's all those classic scenes. So really, you do need to see the film from 1972, which you've seen. It's a disaster flick. But they do the parody where they have every single famous scene or famous line. You know, they crank it up about four notches, and you'll be smiling from ear to ear. It's very clever.
Shelley Winters always cracks me up.
That's right.
Yeah,
saves the day, right?
She really does, yeah.
And this goes for a while yet. So it's until April the 28th, and it's at the Edge Theater. So a little bit more to the north side on North Broadway, but again, where it's kind of a little bit more of a couple steps up than just storefront theater,
right.
Plush seats, but really, they've come a long way. It's Hell in a Handbag Productions is David Serta's company, and they started out in a very, very, very small storefront, which is where you said a lot of our theater, a great theater, is born, and His other big hit right now is it's a lampoon of the Golden Girls.
Oh, and, yeah.
Yeah, it's the plague for a while.
This this sort of resurgence of people's this like love for the Golden Girls has been cracking me up. There's
ridiculous.
Yeah, there's action figures and there's all these, you know, stage productions there. I think there's actually going to be like a Golden Girls cruise coming up. So I love that they're doing Golden Girls
there. Yeah, and it's all these new generations again that have tapped into this.
Yes.
He picks a few of the favorite episodes and adds a few of his own. And it's so well done that it's a piece, again, these original pieces that he has written and produced. They're part of his catalog. And I was just hearing tonight from the theater crowd that he's on his way to Indianapolis tomorrow because they're doing a production of it down there. So it's spreading across the country, this silly kind of fun parody of the Golden Girls as well. So either or, it's a great equal opportunity with David Serta's fun spoofs and parodies.
As a theater writer and critic, have you seen something like that before where, you know, some production company, some director or writer latches on to the thing that's just going to take off, whether it's something like, I don't know, Vagina Monologues, which, you know, still runs in different variations. Has there been something you're like, oh, that was a really smart idea and it just exploded?
You see some of it, but a lot of times it's tough. There's so much competition that things that you think are going to be born right here and the seed is planted and it's going to take off. Sometimes it doesn't quite grow that well, and it's pretty hard for something to make it where it becomes so mainstream that it crosses the country. So that's why it makes me so proud of what David Serta has been able to do. But even with the large splashy productions you were talking about downtown with Broadway in Chicago, they'll launch something and it will go to Newark, it'll go someplace, but then sometimes it doesn't go a lot further than that. So it's a gamble, it's tough. You know, so many people's idea of entertainment is in the palm of their hand when it comes to their phone, and it's hard to get them motivated to dig in their pocket and spend some money and spend that time in a theater seat. But it's an original experience every single time. That's why I love theater so much.
I agree. Although I will say, you know, John, we were talking earlier about our kids. I don't know if you had to go see any of the school productions of your daughter's friends.
Of course.
Yeah. It can be rough. The teacher, like the theater director at Griffin's grade school, had high aspirations and had all the kids on wireless microphones, like the but the thing was that none of the kids knew how to modulate. Like, they would all be yelling and then you don't have anybody on the board to like roll down like people who are too loud, or you hear like them like heavy breathing after they finish a dance number. I'm like, I can't possibly. You know,
some kids should be stagehands.
That's right.
I just don't think a kid's production needs to have, what do they even call those kind of little microphones that go over the ear and it's like the flesh colored
isn't it? It's almost
like a lavalier,
yeah, that goes right over the ear.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Fourth graders don't need lavalier mics.
They should learn to project, right? The old-fashioned way.
This is what I'm saying.
Yes, yeah, see? Yep.
Those old auditoriums at these, you know, and it was at Amundsen, so they've got that auditorium was built
probably
in the
built
30s.
For that, sure. They didn't have those. Yeah.
I'm just saying, I hear these kids yell in the playgrounds. They can belt it out.
Play to the nosebleed. Nosebleed seats, yeah.
And I'm guessing a lot of these productions. Now, tell me about for colored girls who have considered suicide, When the Rainbow is Enough.
It's the Court Theater, and that's, you know, right over in Hyde Park, right on the edge of University of Chicago campus. And so many people, I find that the court remains kind of this hidden gem that they forget about. And they always do theater that gets you thinking, which you want all theater to do. Of course, you want to be entertained. But, you know, a theater experience that leaves you talking about it all the way home in the car, you know you've done your job. And so this is the story of eight women, and talked about their stories, and then they use everything from poetry to music, movement. You know, again, it's an experience that it kind of transcends. And you think 2019, so many stories have been told that we've come so far, but you hear the stories that unfold on that stage and you realize we still have a very long way to come to again to overcome what are so many of the common stereotypes and generalizations that happen, and that's what's told through this great piece, and it's one that it continues again just this weekend. So I thought, this is a time when I'm going to make sure I get all these last minute, or people are thinking about the weekend, if it's going to be a little bit cold, a little bit rainy, here's some opportunities to catch it before it leaves.
And Melissa Dupre is a part of this cast, and she is an absolute force of nature, and she doesn't mess around when she collaborates with other people, so I'm sure that everybody else in this cast is as extraordinary as Melissa.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, so this is, again, that's for colored girls who have considered suicide, When the Rainbow is Enough. It's at the Court Theater, and again, as Phil said, it's running through April 14th. We are talking to Phil Potempa. He is a theater writer, critic, and a columnist. We want to find out more about the productions around Chicago when we come back. We're also hanging out with John O'Malley, and we're going to find out what's the one or two possibly law enforcement shows that he'll sit down to watch, because I don't watch shows about comedians. I'm just saying. And Scott Santis, it doesn't like that about me. I'm like, okay, then fine. More in a moment on 720 WGN. It is Theater Thursday. We are hanging out in the Allstate Skyline studio. John O'Malley is hanging out with us tonight. I thought, you know, he came down here. You always do such great work on all the breaking stories. I thought it'd be fun to let you have you ride sidecar.
Thank God, there's nothing tragic that's happened, right?
No, exactly. Yeah.
Thanks for the Greta Van Fleet. Awesome. They were great at the Aragon.
I had to redeem myself from the last bump that I played. You didn't like that too much.
How about all music?
Speaking of which, Phil Potempa joined us. I have to tell you guys, and Phil, if you listen to the show, anybody, regulars who are, you know, text in, and I'm guessing John has heard before, Vivian is starting to learn this about me.
Yes.
I have an appalling lack of musical knowledge, and I forgot to mention last week that one of our listeners, Lamond, was asking about a song.
Oh, really?
And my husband found it.
Oh, he did? Which one was it?
It was Ex-Ambassadors. Does that sound familiar? Hold on. Let me look. I have the text in front of me. Hold on.
Okay.
My husband said it's from Tuesday, so I have to go all the way back.
Ooh.
Not Flock of Seagulls. No, it's not that one.
No, it's
Did you want asparagus, or is it? No. No. Steve, I don't think he's listening right now. Oh, he told me he sent it to me, but I can't find. Here it is. Don't forget, it's Boom 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 by the Ex-Ambassadors, and it has the zoom, zoom, zoom that Lamond was looking for. Does that sound
so familiar? There was a zoom, zoom, zoom in
there. There was, yes.
Yes. The person that texted us was saying his zoom, zoom, zoom.
Zoom, yeah.
Zoom, zoom, zoom. And I'm like, what is he talking about?
That was a great show on Channel 11 back in the day.
Zoom.
Remember Zoom?
Yes, I do. Sure.
02134.
That's right, that zip code. Famous zip code.
Did you guys ever write into Zoom? I don't know if I ever did.
I can't say that I did.
I wrote in as Sonas Vanguly was the
Boston
only
Mass.
They all had the accents. You know,
yeah.
Their striped shirt, sure.
Yeah, man. Then they did a reboot of that. My son used to watch that when he was in grade school.
It couldn't have been good, though, was it?
Oh, come on. He liked Rough, too. Okay, that's not what we're talking about. We are talking about the great theater in Chicago. Phil Potempa is a theater critic. And, oh, man, my husband just texted me. He goes, good, I'm glad you remembered. Thanks. Let me turn off my phone. Phil is a theater critic and columnist for the Post Tribune.
Mm-hmm,
and we have a lot of great productions that he wants to tell you about in Chicago. Some of them are closing pretty soon. Here's one that just started last week, which is Lottery Day. Tell us a little bit about this one.
A Lottery Day unlike any other Lottery Day you might think of it. I think of my high school literature class and the short story called The Lottery Ticket. That's not what this is, but also still probing in and will get you thinking. This goes until April the 28th at the Goodman Theater. Not a bad seat anywhere, and you feel like you are a part of what's unfolding on that stage. So look at this scenario, and we were just talking about this off the air earlier about all of our own neighborhoods and where we live and kind of what the, you know, the flavor is and how neighborhoods change and transition. Well, that's what this story is about. It's about a group of neighbors and an infamous barbecue. And you think of what happens just at any barbecue as things unfold and people have become a little bit more comfortable and maybe enjoy a beverage or two. In this case, they're talking about how the neighborhood is changing, and one of the key hosts of this barbecue has an idea of how to revitalize, bring the community back. So that's kind of where our jumping point is for this particular plot, and then as it unfolds, you're definitely on the edge of your seat to find out what's brewing inside the idea minds of all these people and how different they really are once you start hearing their opinions.
This sounds amazing.
Yeah.
And the Goodman Theater, this is one of my favorite places. Not because I like going to Pettorino's afterwards, but that's
a door connects you right there in the lobby, right?
It does.
So easy access.
I'm like, it's better to eat beforehand so you're not thinking about it.
That's right. That's
right. That's fantastic. So that's Lottery Day at the Goodman Theater,
right,
running through April 28th. Is that what you said?
That's right. Yep.
Excellent.
The 28th.
So that's fantastic. And the next one is, this is timely.
Isn't it? I'm telling you. Somebody had a crystal ball with this one.
Here, look at the title of this one, John. It's Admissions. What would you do to get your kid into college?
Oh, my Lord.
How crazy is that?
This is great.
At Theater Wit, right there at 1229 West Belmont, they do this programming, you know, as you very well know, a year or earlier in advance to pick their seasons to have something that has this subject matter, and it is exactly what you think it's about. It's about what's making the headlines right now. how much of an influence do parents have on where their children go to college, and what will they do to make sure that their child gets into the college of their choice, or at least where they think they should go? Again, you couldn't write this. It's like, again,
that's
somebody
unreal.
Yeah, is peering into the future. This, you know, again, it's playing right now. Chicago premiere. It's a chance to see something unfold right now that's rip right out of the headlines, but unfolding right there on stage to get the conversation going in the theater.
That is incredible. And I love that strip right there with Fullstrom's Fish Market. Right, I know where all the restaurants are by the theater.
She says she hasn't made it to the theater lately, yeah, but she still knows these restaurant locations.
Well, I perform at Stage 773 with Sketchfest and stuff like that, too.
Right.
So, and I love the productions
that
they
territory.
Do. That is my stomping ground. But I love the theaters. Both of those theaters are tremendous. Do you want to take a look at that one?
Yes.
This is so funny.
Please
and the absolute brightness of Leonard Pelkey.
Mm-hmm.
American Blues Theater.
Yep, American Blues. They always do great things. Again, a little bit farther into our north here of the city. But American Blues Theater always bring something that's different to the stage, which is nice. And we talked about how all these theaters have their own personality. What makes this show special is that it is a one-man production. Joe Faust is in the lead, and he is playing all these different characters, all these different genders, and talking and about subjects such as, it really kind of talks about the title character and this young man who's trying to find his own identity, marches to his own drum, which is what we like, but also has to face what it's like to dare to be different in today's schools with bullying and things of that nature. And so it is all of the people around him that are telling his story. So you're not actually going to meet young Leonard, and as we should say, so to speak, in quotes, but you're going to meet all these characters and feel like you know him by the end of that performance. And a one-man show, as you know, it's hard to be up there by yourself and to carry it, and boy, Joe does it. He's able to do it with this piece. That continues until April the 27th.
Yeah, the thing about a one-person show, I've meant to write everything out and get a director. I've had one director, and when you don't have the same vision, when it's your own story, but this sounds like something where he's really embodying different
yes.
characters and bringing them to life.
He is, and really, he does it. And he's fantastic in any role he is. Many of your listeners might know him from The Goodman. He's had kind of a standing tradition the last, I'd say, 4 or 5 years of being Jacob Marley, the ghost that comes back to haunt Ebenezer Scrooge. And so he's the one that's wrapped in the chains and scares everybody. And so his home at around Christmas time has been The Goodman traditionally in that role. But boy, does he really take a chunk out of this performance.
See, and that's the thing. If there's something you want to get better at, watch the ones that do it well.
Yes,
watch
every time.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
every time.
So The Goodman Theater, you have the Sweat. Is this running right? Yes, this is running now through this weekend only. So at the
yes.
Goodman Theater, they do have different spaces. Which stage is this on?
That is on their main stage. That is in the large theater right
okay.
now. Yeah, because they have their smaller space, which is usually kind of more of a general open seating, and then in the main theater. And, yeah, Sweat it's going to also be one of the things that's going to finish up this week in April the 14th, talking about the dynamics of coworkers. I love the words you use here, collision of race and friendships. The people that you work with, in this case, it's set in a factory, and how well are you friends with the people that you work with, and how, what a thin thread that is when things can quickly divide and can turn the other way, and that's what happens with this fantastic, very riveting performance.
That's, and by the way, I'm looking ahead at the Goodman Theater schedule, too. They've got A Winter's Tale coming up in May, and then Mary Zimmerman's, she's doing The Music Man?
Yes, I knew you'd
what
love that.
What is happening? 76 Chumb. See, I know that one.
Yeah.
The Wells Fargo Wagons. Come and, see, I do know musicals.
Yeah, you do. That's this summer. That's June the 29th, August the 4th. It seems like all the attention has gone to Broadway, and that Hugh Jackman is going to step into that role on Broadway, but you don't need to wait until it comes to The Great White Way. Right here at the Goodman Theater, again, Mary Zimmerman, The Music Man. What? Yeah, we're going to say, "About get your tickets right away," right?
Yeah, no, I'm like, oh, wait a minute, I better let them know. Gary, Indiana. I love Ron Howard, but I mean, like, it's obviously always a good production. And finally, we're going to round things out, our conversation with Phil Potempa on Mama's Boy.
Yes.
So this is, this is fascinating. Here, take a look at this.
Incredible. And I had to do a shout out for our friends, again, right across the state line in Indiana, Toll Theater. Toll Theater is kind of that hybrid that's a combination between, it's not really storefront, storefront theater. It's not. It's more of a regional theater. They pay their actors and their cast there. But what, and smaller, kind of intimate, 80 seats. What they're doing is a brand new one, and this is coming out in my Post Tribune this Friday. I wrote a preview piece. Mama's Boy, May the 3rd it opens, goes all the way to May the 19th, right in the heart of downtown Haven. It is the story of Lee Harvey Oswald, the assassin of our president, President Kennedy, and what a type of relationship he had with his mother, who was very, very controlling. And again, I'm kind of a history buff, but I don't know that I really knew all the nuances of him. And again, what a controlled childhood he had. And even after the assassination of the president and then his own assassination, his mother then, I didn't know this, took to writing a book and did a book tour and kind of really capitalized on what was such a national tragedy. Didn't get very far because, I think the country and the nation and the world frowned that they thought she was trying to, again, maybe use what were the minutes of some of the most devastation of headlines that happened, including her son's assassination, which happened on live TV when he was being led from his cell. And this is a woman who was married, I think, four times, his mom, and she had a very kind of a strained relationship with her son, but also very controlling. They slept in the same bed until age 11 or 12. A very, very strange dynamic. And so this tells what happens right before his relationship with his mother, and then through the actual moments of history, and then afterwards. It's a Midwest premiere, so you couldn't have seen it anywhere before. And what's best is it's written by Rob Urbanati, and he's going to be there for the talk back. So if you're going to get your tickets, might as well pick that Friday night when the author's going to be there. And again, you're going to be a part of history yourself for the Midwest premiere of this.
That's great. That's where can people find all the stuff that you've written about and find out more about your work?
You can always go to www.chicagotribune.com because the Post Tribune, again, is under the umbrella of Chicago Tribune Media, so everything is there. And then my own website, www.ofnotoriety.com, has all those reviews, and that's the name of the entertainment column that I do in the Post Tribune. So a little crossover there makes it very, very easy.
And this half hour will be available as its own podcast, so people want to go back and listen to it, they can get a chance to do that. And we'd love to talk to you in a few weeks about new productions.
I would love
to see you
that.
Again.
Thank
yeah,
you so
no,
much.
This is fantastic. Thank you, Phil.
Thank you.
See, sometimes people always ask, how do you get on your show? And ask sometimes.
It's a civil knock on the door.
There you go. More after this on 720 WGN. Thursday night, we are live in the Allstate Skyline Studio. We've been hanging out tonight with John O'Malley, former U.S. Marshal, Deputy Chief of the Northern District. He's a law enforcement expert, and he is a contributor regularly here at WGN Radio, as well as WGN TV. When there's breaking news, his number is at the top of my list. And Scott Stantis and I talk about the news afterwards a lot. And,
yes.
And Scott is the political cartoonist for the Chicago Tribune. You're listening to the Patty Vasquez Show, 720 WGN. And so, John, one of the shows that Scott has enjoyed and can't believe that I don't watch is The Marvelous Mrs. Maisel. And,
have you watched it?
No, I haven't. No.
Oh, it's very good.
But John likes the show Crashing, which is about a stand-up comic. Yeah, about a stand-up comic. And it actually stars a friend of mine and several people that I know. Beth Stelling writes for the show. But it's about stand-up comedy. And I'm sure they do a great job, but it feels like work to me when I try to watch it. And I also know them, so it's a little bit weird to me. So I asked John, because you didn't accept my comparison to watching shows about cartoonists.
Yes, I did. I responded to that. No, that was one of the ladies and gentlemen who are listening right now.
You liked those shows, but it wasn't quite about...
No, I didn't, because I said I like Mrs. Maisel, and you just shot it down.
Yes.
And it was during our recommendations on The Mincing Rascals, which we're supposed to have that space to ourselves.
Now we do. Now it's a protected space, although John kind of interrupts us sometimes.
Well, and Zorn does too. Yes. Right when you're about to deliver the punchline, Zorn will say something. He's like, oh, thanks a lot, dude.
By the way, The Mincing Rascals, where we interrupt each other, is available today without Scott, unfortunately, Eric.
Actually, I was speaking at Highland Park High School, and the kids were great. Absolutely focused on the arts. I was there 2 years ago, and it was a nightmare, frankly. The kids didn't care, didn't want to be there, didn't want to hear what I had to say. One of the kids was actually on his iPhone with the earbuds in.
Nice.
It was horrible. And so they asked me again. I went, and I went. And we were talking off the air. You go to a gig, and I don't know about you, I get nervous. And I mean, really nervous every time. No, it can be like to a group of 10 or a group of 1,000. I just get nervous. It's just how I'm built. But this was one of the first times I've ever spoken, just dreading, like, oh, they're going to be terrible. They're going to, oh, this is going to suck.
Yeah.
They were great. They were engaged, asked good questions. The young woman who introduced me had heard me speak before and asked to introduce me. I mean, it was really, so it turned into, like, it was great. It was just turned
out to be
great.
I'm so glad. Because there's really, you know, my chest tightens up because you want to do well, mostly because it feels better when it goes well. You want them to have enjoyed it and learned something, perhaps. You hope that someone's interested in what you do as a craft. But, you know, when it goes well, it's amazing.
It is. But now getting back to the Mincing Rascals and Marvelous Mrs. Maisel.
Yes.
Mrs. Maisel. And I recommend it. You jumped all over me.
I'm sorry.
And you said it was,
I think it's, I probably preemptively did that because everyone assumes that I like it. And it's funny because there's this collection of female comics online who are like, please stop asking me if I like the Marvelous Mrs. Maisel or Maisel.
So what were you going to say?
So I asked John if he watches shows about law enforcement.
Right.
And he said there's only one that he's watched, maybe two. Because
Oh, really?
The rest of them, it's just hard. I mean, it's just...
It's hard because they don't get it right?
Yeah. I mean, not so much that they don't get it right, but... you know, just, yeah, I have a hard time watching the tactics or, you know, how they make law enforcement officers to be. And we were talking earlier, I said, I think the one I really, really enjoyed, and others as well, in my former profession, was The Wire on HBO, from so many standpoints. But they obviously had really good technical advisors on that show from either Baltimore PD or maybe some, I think the DEA, there was a retired DEA agent.
Well, the guy who wrote it,
the
one who created it, was actually a journalist who covered Cop Shop for years.
Correct, yeah. Homicide on the Streets in Baltimore. A great time, you know, it was, I just thought it was the storyline went up and down, but the show itself was fairly realistic to what really happens in law enforcement.
Okay, well, here's what Patty did to me. Because then she sends me, I think I emailed you later.
I think you might have posted about it.
Yeah, and then you
wrote
back to me and says, what about those it's as good as those shows about cartoonists. Now, most shows, almost all of them, about cartoonists are awful. First of all, the cartoonists apparently never work. And when they do, they sit there like the Ted Knight show.
Yeah.
Too Close for Comfort.
He would draw with the pen in the puppet's mouth.
Right, and he would have this moving puppet.
Right, and so, no, that's not how this works. You know how it works? Because the show would never be watched. It's like, it takes 2 hours. Patty's seen the process.
Yes.
90% of it is staring into space.
So
blankly.
So is stand-up comedy sometimes.
Writing. I bet writing.
Well, but I mean, like, that's the thing about Marvelous Mrs. Maisel is I watch it and she goes on stage and, like, kills. And it's hard to watch some of that. But in general, it's also, like, work.
But there are parts of it that I thought showed process. That, I mean, yeah, I mean, it's a TV show, so they're not going to, okay.
Right. It's a sweet show. Incredible performers, incredible writers. All of it is great to look at, too. It's so beautiful with the time period. But it's work for me. And I know nurses and doctors who can't watch Grey's Anatomy,
right.
You know.
And the problem with law enforcement shows is, you know, prosecutors have come across this is, call it the CSI effect on these jurors. And
saying,
where's all the, you know, how come you didn't have all this spectacular evidence in the case? And, or
surely there are follicles somewhere.
How people react to law enforcement from, you know, television and movies are just that, right? So that becomes an issue because what they see on television or movies they think is reality.
Right.
So, and right, like you're saying, Patty, a show about comics, they don't show all the times they go up on stage and there's two people there and they bomb or, you know, all that goes into, you know, doing 5 minutes on stage, right? They make it look super easy, I would guess, you know.
Well, and they show Mrs. Maisel's struggles. By the way, the 219 says, my dad was a New York City policeman, and he said the most realistic police show on the air,
NYPD Blue,
was Barney Miller.
Oh, well, yeah, it was a great one back in the day, but it was really based in the squad room.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I liked NYPD Blue, too. That was a hot show in the early 90s into the mid-90s.
I thought Cop Rock was good.
Cop Rock? Are you watching Rookie Blue on reruns? Is that what you do? What are some of the, like, you can tell me some of the worst ones. You try watching and you just rolled your eyes.
You know, I've never seen a full episode of Chicago PD.
Oh, boy.
And as a matter of fact, I was flicking through channels last night, and there was a scene on Chicago PD where they were going into some drug dealer's house or something, and a girl pulled a gun on the officers, and one of the female officers, she just grabbed the gun out of the girl's hands because she said, the girl was saying in Spanish, there's no bullets, there's no bullets. And, you know, I just had to turn it off because that's just so ridiculous. That's so ridiculous.
You're like, I'm out.
What are some of the other bad ones? I don't know. I look at the tactics or what, could potentially really happen. It goes on what advisors are using. I don't know who Chicago PD is using. But
you know what my husband and I are watching right now, which we watched while it was actually running, was The Closer with Kira Sedgwick.
Mm.
That was a TNT show, and it was really it's kind of fun to watch again.
You like it as much?
We like it as much. There's an episode where Parenza and Flynn have tickets. They have Skybox tickets to see the Dodgers, and they both have their their Dodgers jackets on and their baseball hats. And Flynn's car is not starting. He's like, we got to take your car. And they open the garage, and in Parenza's garage, there's a dead body, and he closes the garage. And Flynn's like, what are you doing? He's like, we got to go to the game. She's still going to be dead when we come back. Right? And so hijinks ensue with a dead body.
And I'd be remiss to mention The Fugitive and U.S. Marshals.
Yes. Those movies.
Great movies.
Let's talk about those when we come back. We're talking to John O'Malley. He is a former U.S. Marshal and a deputy chief of the Northern District, our law enforcement expert here at WGN Radio. Scott Stantis, the political cartoonist for the Chicago Tribune, member of the editorial board, and one of the regulars of the Mincing Rascals, and his own podcast, Prickly City.
Yeah, Prickly City Podcast.
It's available. I always love the pictures that you do. You did a nice one of this. Was it out of this studio?
Yeah.
Over the river?
Was it?
I'm so bad with directions.
Next door. No, it was right next door.
Well, there you go.
It's dark.
More when we come back. 312-981-7200. Actually, great question. Is there a profession out there, like maybe you're a nurse or a doctor? Is there a show you do like or that you hate and you just can't stand watching it? Vivian, we want to find out what you watch, too. When we come back, we want to know.
It'll be a very easy answer.
More when we come back on 720 WGN. Call or text us at 312-981-7200. Again, the number 312-981-7200. So, Rookie Blue, not your favorite show? Former U.S. Marshal John O'Malley.
I don't think I've ever saw that one.
Never saw.
No, I'm not a big TV watcher.
You strike me as not a big TV watcher. Like, you got a lot of things going on.
I do, probably too much, but yeah.
Yeah. I don't watch as much. I've gotten to the point where I'm watching stuff that I liked before. Vivian, what are you watching?
The Office.
Oh, The Office.
Nice. That's good.
I've seen several episodes. I love
The Office.
Do you really? You're like the third person to say that in the last 2 days. It's bizarre. I can't watch it.
Why?
The Steve Carell character is so annoying.
I can't stand watching him. It's so funny. Does he remind you of a boss? Not now, but I mean like in your life?
No, certainly not now. I think kind of clueless and just annoying as hell and still decides that they're in charge. It's just, I can't get past that.
Have you seen the British version? Have you watched
that?
Yes,
I've seen pieces of that too.
Yeah,
and you can't watch that one either?
I haven't watched much of it only because sometimes the language, I mean the accents accent. Are like, wait, what? I need subtitles.
You can get subtitles. Just push that button. Like, I do that.
You were just showing me. Patty, for those of you not watching, she actually demonstrated how you push a button to me. So thank you, Patty.
I have a button.
New to your country.
So on my Roku remote, I'm actually pushing it where I know the caption button is. So that's what I actually just did. Like, it's just, because usually it's on by accident, so I know where to push it to turn it off.
And if you're watching the star video on WGN,
I'm doing it repeatedly.
See Patty demonstrate how to push a button.
Right.
Thank you.
My world has just
opened up.
Well, like on this one, Scott, you can use this remote right here. You can go to see where it says caption right there.
See?
I'm just going to go ahead and show that to you.
Caption?
I'm going to turn my caption. On this television, I have to scroll through to pick the right. Okay, there we go. Let's see what Beto O'Rourke has to say with his hands. Anyway.
It's interpretive dance.
But there are shows that a lot of people love that, you know, you don't get into it. And then they're weird about it when you don't like the Marvelous. I can't believe you don't like that.
And also Game of Thrones.
No,
I've never watched.
Never.
I've never watched that.
Oh, really?
And I'm getting so much heat from that.
No, I've watched.
Oh, you have? Do you like it?
Very much, yeah.
Oh.
Yeah.
But you're all set for
the 8th
season? I can't
watch it with Janine. I started... Okay. I binge cheated on my wife.
What?
I started watching it without her.
No.
I was halfway through the season.
That's a thing now.
It is.
Well, she was visiting her parents, and I didn't have it. So I started watching it, and I said, I'll watch it again. It's really good. I can watch half a season again. No, no. It's over. It's just like, no, you've cheated on me. I can never. And so she never watched it.
Because she wants to have the original experience with you.
I'm not that smart, and my memory's terrible.
Guys, take notes. Don't binge watch cheat again. On your wife.
Don't
or don't tell her.
Yeah, well, that was my first mistake.
Why would you tell her? Sorry, Janine.
She can't watch when we watch. Leonardo DiCaprio gets mauled by a bear. Which movie is that?
I have never seen it, but I know what you're talking about.
Yeah, Unforgiven or Unbearable or whatever the hell it's called.
Apparently, he's unbearable.
But Janine cannot tell. She is like beard blind.
She's what blind?
Beard blind.
She can't watch. She doesn't know who somebody is when they have a beard.
So. Game of Thrones is completely like she can't watch it because she can't tell who's who. You're just going, no, that's the Mother of Dragons. She doesn't. She's the blonde woman without the beard.
She loses track of who's who. I do the same thing.
She doesn't lose track. She really can't tell the difference. Who's who?
Oh my god.
Yeah.
So although
beard blind. I think I just came up with two
I've
new.
Never heard of that.
Beard blind. I will say, and I've said this many times, and you can roll your eyes if you want. One of the problems I have with Game of Thrones is there's a lot of mud, and for some reason, like there is a lot of mud. Like I can hear the mud, and everything seems wet, and it just
yeah. Moist.
It bothers me. And they all look like they smell. And every time I turn it on.
You can smell them through the TV? You're imagining they
smell them through
the TV.
Love that they got that right.
Yeah, back then, I don't know if there was.
There were no, they didn't
care.
Not
a lot of cleanliness.
No, and like I turned it on the other day because they were doing a marathon on HBO, and there's this blonde woman eating a heart, and they're like, she's doing a really good job. I'm like, well, how do you rate somebody on eating a heart? Do you know what I'm talking about? She had
no.
Yeah,
no.
It was gross.
So your wife's not a fan of ZZ Top, then, I imagine.
Yeah, she can't tell them apart. She knows Beard, the drummer, but...
So are you doing anything fancy for the premiere of Game of Thrones? No. Going to put your feet up and watch it?
I'm going to have John Cass talk to me the next day. You didn't watch it the first day!
Oh, boy.
I love John Cass.
That's my John Cass imitation. It's pretty good, huh? I don't talk like that. No, John, you absolutely don't.
He really does.
Yeah,
he really does. I'm trying to think. I'm watching the series S Creek. I can't say the name of the show on the... It's Poop Creek, but it's S Creek. It's it's spelled S-C-H. I've been asked not to do
yes.
it. Yes. Although Dave Plyer... I really should just run the audio of David Plyer saying it, because apparently if you do it at like 3 in the morning, it's okay.
Oh,
but I love Eugene Levy, Dan Levy, and Catherine O'Hara. The whole cast is amazing. You've never seen... You tried watching it.
We did.
Okay.
No beards.
I'm going to need you to jump forward, because they do such a wonderful job with this romantic relationship between Patrick and David. It's like, I don't know how to phrase this. Like, you know, sometimes there'll be romantic couples that you're like, oh, I wish I was them. You know, it is so beautiful. It's on Pop. But you can also buy the season. I bought the season on Amazon. My husband doesn't know this because I didn't realize that we had the channel Pop. So I bought the season of it like for $2 an episode. I needed it
that
badly.
Netflix?
It's on Netflix.
The first four seasons are. The fifth season is brand new.
So okay, I have not started the fifth season.
It's so good.
I have to check that out because I have Netflix.
It's such a good one.
So confused on what to watch.
But now I will say that a lot of people are with Scott, where it's kind of like, yeah, I watched a few episodes and I didn't get into it. I don't know if I should just like drop you in the middle of like the third season. I think when David decides to open the apothecary,
yes,
maybe somewhere around there. Do we drop him into that episode? Right,
do it. Yeah,
I think the episode's
good. That's middle of the second season.
Yeah, it might be the middle of the second season.
All right.
Yeah, because I mean,
David's the son.
Yeah, David.
He's terrific.
David.
I think his performance is terrific.
Oh, anything with Eugene Levy and
this is his
SCTV
son.
People.
It's his
and it's his daughter. His daughter is in there too. You know that, right?
Yes.
Which one is she?
She plays Twyla, the waitress.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
John's like, I don't know what's going on.
I have no family affair. I know they were on SCTV, so that's good enough for me.
Such a good...
Weren't they?
Yeah. Eugene Levy and Catherine O'Hara. Oh. And one of the other castmates owns the Blouse House. More after this on 720 WTF. It's Robin Duke is the name of the actress who it was also on SCTV and plays the owner of the Blouse House on the series S Creek, which I can't say because it's yeah, I can't say that word. We should find like a sound or like some sort of sound I can do. Like, I mean, this wouldn't. I don't know if any of these would work, but oh, well, you know what, this would work.
Yeah,
you know,
or this one. So, but I don't know how to time it where I'm saying the word and this. You know, I don't want to mess that up. I don't know what the rest of these buttons are. These are Rokan's buttons. What are these? What is this one?
Number five.
Oh my god! Oh, that's
the top five.
Top five and five. Yeah, that's so funny.
Why are people getting punched?
Maybe they have it coming.
Oh my god, Patty!
Oh, you know what we can do when you're on, John. I can do this one next time.
Oh, Law and Order. That was a good show.
Funny.
Hold on, this one. No, that's not good. All right. Oh, I'm sorry. It's time for the news. Our conversation continues after the news. Actually, we didn't get a chance to talk about U.S. Marshal and The Fugitive,
sure.
Which I think you're a little bit familiar with those productions when we come back.
Sure.
After the news. We're jamming into Friday. It's Friday morning, everybody. If you're listening to the Patty Vasquez Show, we are live in the Allstate Skyline Studio. Joining me is Scott Stantis, the political cartoonist for the Chicago Tribune. We'll check in with some of the work that he's been doing this week and what's been catching his attention in the headlines. John O'Malley, a former U.S. Marshal, and he was the Deputy Chief for the Northern...
Chief Deputy.
But I've been saying it wrong all night and you didn't correct me.
That's
Chief
whatever.
Deputy.
It's
neither here nor there. Is that what you're saying?
Yep.
It seems like I should get the title correct. You never even corrected me.
I know.
Chief Deputy.
Yep.
The Northern District.
Correct.
And a law enforcement expert, contributor here at WGN Radio and WGN Television. We were talking a bit about how it's hard to watch shows that portray your particular profession. Scott and I can't watch the shows that are sort of supposed to be about comedians or cartoonists.
Or journalists.
Or journalists, right. You were talking about that. We have a listener who texted in from the 630-815. Oh, sorry. Why am I reading her number out? What just happened there? I am a nurse, and I like to watch the reenactment shows on ER, and the reenactment shows with mysterious DX diagnosis, mysterious illnesses.
Mm.
It has to be a DX, right? Is that what DX is? It's got to be.
Sure.
And like to see if I can diagnose the patient before they can, before they tell the diagnosis. Most drama hospital shows are frustrating to me due to mistakes or ridiculous sex scenes. Nurses and doctors don't really have time for that. I've heard that from a lot of people who work in hospitals. They're like, you don't have time to go into a storage closet or go to they've got bunk beds in the lounge area.
Yeah. Right.
Nobody, what? Does it disappoint you?
A little
Scott?
Bit.
Oh,
yeah.
Sorry. Do you watch Grey's Anatomy?
No.
That was one show. Do you have a show that you know that's gone on for years and years and you keep hanging in there because it's like, I got to see how this ends? But I mean, 13 seasons in or whatever. We've got to be 13 seasons into.
Is that still on? That
yeah.
Wow.
Yeah, Shonda Rhimes built an empire.
Is McDreamy still, isn't it some dude?
McDreamy
is he,
left.
Is he still McDreamy? Or
McDreamy
no?
left, McSteamy left. They both died. I don't want to. There was McSteamy, it's true.
No, there wasn't.
Yes, there was. McSteamy was, okay. So McDreamy and
was that the character's name? Or?
No, it was a nickname for him. Here, okay. you can Google McSteamy on Grey's Anatomy.
Oh, I don't want to see what ads come up for a month after that one. Because
no, I'm good.
And the actor who played him actually went on to, I think, sort of a sci-fi show. I want to say like McSteamy and McDreamy. Yeah, if you Google McSteamy and McDreamy, they come up together.
That's the name of a band.
Here, I'll show you. That's McSteamy and McDreamy right there.
Oh, yeah, okay. I've seen
that's
them.
Pretty accurate, right? Would you say McSteamy and McDreamy are accurate depictions of those two gentlemen? Patrick Dempsey.
Sure.
And I don't know what the other guy's name is. That's not fair. I can't remember his name. Eric Dane was the actor who
sounds
played.
Sounds British.
Mixed. It's just horrible. It does sound. Sounds or Danish.
That's too high.
So, in my very brief experience in working on Chicago Fire, I played Nurse Ryan, and they do have a nurse. I spent about 45 minutes with a nurse who taught me how to do the lines, how to how you would check for rebounding if a patient's not they're not oxidizing, having oxidation. Sorry, nurse at the 630. But so they spent quite a bit of time to at least make it look like we can move in a professional way, hanging a bag,
yep.
Dropping the sides of of the gurney, things like that. But, you know, that's just the some of the technical aspects. When you were working on, you worked on both The Fugitive and U.S. Marshal?
So when they came to town to film The Fugitive, yeah, we a couple of the actors came and did some ride-alongs with us. And there was one, so if you watch the movie The Fugitive, you'll see that they wear their badges around their neck on a little leather thing. So I was telling Joe Pantoliano, who was one of the actors in that show, Joe Pants, how about one time I was almost shot, and the only thing that, by a Chicago police officer, the only thing that he hesitated on was when I turned, I had my badge around my, on a, you know, lanyard around my neck at my chest level, and he saw that. So they all of a sudden just went to their little production studio and made those. And you'll see in the movie they're all wearing them. But yeah, so they came around, just kind of got a feel for what we talk about and what happens when you're looking for people. And so, you know, they take little bits and pieces, but I think that's important to shadow or see what who you're portraying in a movie or television, just to get a kind of idea, like you were just saying, at mm-hmm. least how to. So it makes it look somewhat realistic.
Can I ask a question? When you arrested someone, you put them in the car, and did they be like, are you Tommy Lee Jones? Did that ever happen?
No. Afterwards, like, people reference that now, and that the movie The Fugitive and then the follow up U.S. Marshals did great things for the agency, because you know, people reference that back. Before that, it was Matt Dillon, you know, Wyatt Earp, those kind of comments, and at least it was great publicity for the agency.
I mean, I was just asking if the actors were riding along, were the criminals like surprised that you had,
but
you know.
We brought him on. I can remember it was specifically Joe Pantoliano, and there was one other actor. He played a deputy marshal, and you know, we used to go out really early in the morning, so we did our briefing with them, and this guy was a bad actor we were going after, and we were kind of trying to tell him what the situation, that, you know, just be careful. They had to wear vests in the whole nine yards. And this big, bad drug dealer, when we went to the house, he basically answered the door. He's like, can I just get my shoes on? Like, it was like, turned out to be like a whole lot of nothing. And Joe, you know, Joey Pants was like, oh, yeah, he's a really bad guy. I'm like, it doesn't usually happen like that. I swear to God. But that was my experience. Sometimes the biggest, baddest guys went down the easiest. And someone who, you know, you didn't expect things to go wrong, it always did, you know, so.
Well, that's something we talk about, is the unexpected. And I actually worked on a script with my writing partner, and it was about somebody who was whose father was in law enforcement, and so she was a expert marksman. She was a very good shoot.
Mm-hmm.
And so I actually went to I have a lot of friends in law enforcement who are very kind to take me out on the shooting range, and he was like, you should have been in law enforcement, because mm-hmm. apparently, well, I used to have I'm cross sighted. So I it's like center sight or something like that, where, because I'm left-handed, but I shoot right or something like that. I can't remember. Yeah. But my trigger finger, something weird where I was really good with the target. I still have the
silhouette, the target. Yeah,
yeah. Yeah. But I think there's something to knowing what that feels like, whether you're writing or, you know, directing is put yourself in that situation. What's that going to feel like? You know, what's that sense of firing a gun if you're going to write about somebody? Scott's not comfortable with the fact that I've ever had a firearm in my hand.
No, that would. Yeah. No, that, well, no, there should be a law.
I have. I've done. I've shot Tommy guns at FBI Citizens.
Have you really?
Like, yeah.
One thing they did, we tried telling them that's they like to rack around into the gun. Like, if you watch the movie again, and we're like, that's, no one ever does that, but they just like the optics of it and the sound of it, which, you know, no police officer ever racks around first before they use their weapon.
That's just a Glock. They never. See, there you go.
Best handguns made. My personal opinion.
Does that make you uncomfortable with if I have
no, not at all. You saw in my when I was in.
Well,
the
Patty, we have to follow up on taking you to the Virtra system that we talked about.
Oh yeah,
what's that?
It's a fairly realistic system that they. Train on shoot, don't shoot situations.
Oh yeah, you have to make a decision.
I've actually done that at Birmingham. It was probably much more primitive than what you.
Yeah, it's probably just single screen.
Yeah,
yeah. This is a room. It's about the size of the studio, and it's fairly. It's pretty much as realistic as you can get from from that perspective. Then there's a shoot house at the Marshall's Task Force where you can put through some scenarios using simunition rounds.
Oh boy!
Wow,
it's pretty good. It's you train, you're going to fall back on the highest level of training you receive. So the more training we do, the better.
How often would you go and do some of that training to make sure that you were up to speed? You know, can some people just keep doing it so that they? I'm guessing there are some in law enforcement that really are aggressive, not aggressive, but
yeah.
diligent about.
It depends on the agency. So I mean. That's one of my issues with, and I hope we get better at, is you know, the Chicago Police Department. It's just a huge department. So, you know, getting training for these officers out there is key. And, you know, we had the luxury of doing a lot of training. We qualified 4 times a year on our handguns. And, you know, the state of Illinois police officers only have to qualify 1 time, 30 rounds. I mean, I'd probably put 2,000 rounds through a handgun a year
and
on a yearly basis, as opposed to, you know, 30.
Is the reason behind that the cost? Or
yeah, cost and the time, and, you know, but there's other things you can do to, you know, tactically. A better trained officer has more confidence in himself or herself, and then, in my opinion, that then transfers down to the community. They see they're well-trained, they see they're more professional. That's going to help that building those relationships that are kind of shaky right now.
Yeah, it's something that needs to be, the police department needs support, and hopefully with our new mayor, they'll be moving in a direction that everyone feels like
Let's hope that
relationship is
yeah.
strengthened. More with our guests when we come back. 312-981-7200. Join our conversation anytime. If you want to chime in, we'd love to hear from you. You can call or text 312-981-7200. We are hanging out in the Allstate Skyline studio. Joining me is Scott Stantis, the political cartoonist for the Chicago Tribune. We also have John O'Malley. He is a former U.S. Marshal, Chief Deputy of the Northern District, and a law enforcement expert contributor here to WGN Radio and WGN Television. And by the way, Scott, you've seen The Untouchables, right?
Yeah, of course.
We were just talking about the Tommy gun off the air.
Yeah.
What did you think of that one with law enforcement depiction?
The movie? What's his face?
Kevin Costner.
Kevin Costner. It was a great movie. Yeah, great movie. But different time. I loved Sean, the character that...
what was the character Sean Connery. That Sean Connery played?
Yeah, he was the Irish cop.
Yeah, he was the Irish cop with the Scottish accent.
Right. mean, the best scene of that movie is when Costner was on the bridge, and then he stopped him, and they talked, and he felt the handgun underneath his jacket, and then he told him he was a Treasury agent, and he walked away. And then he said, "What kind of cop? You didn't even ask me." He said, "You told me you were a Treasury agent." He goes, "But you know who would?" The line goes something like, "Who would say they were if they're not right?" The Treasury.
Yeah. Oh my god.
Great. No, I thought that was a great movie. Fantastic movie.
Yeah, and you know, a lot of people talk about how that's a you know when he actually ended up going down for tax evasion, and that was the accountant in the movie.
Was
a lot of fun to watch too. And another movie that was filmed here in Chicago, and that's it's always so much fun to see our skyline in a movie, isn't it?
It really it's so weird you mentioned that. I was watching Parks and Rec. That's my go-to comfort show. And it was the episode, "We're going to Chicago," and they're right outside the Tribune Tower.
Oh,
and
how
that's
wild.
Exactly where they were. I'm looking at it, and then I started to cry like a child.
Because we missed the Tribune Tower.
Yeah.
Had you done the shows when we were the Tribune Tower as well?
I had not, no.
How do we find you? I mean, no, because you were doing Rose Show before you were doing my show, I think, right?
Yeah. I used to be, one of my roles was like the spokesperson for the agency when things would happen. And you know what really started? It was that Joe Galinowitz case up in Fox Lake.
Okay.
So I was contacted.
Because you were never on my show when I was over there. I would have loved to have.
They had contacted me about something else, and then I said, "No, I just retired. Let me put you in touch with who the current person is." And then they asked if they could ever call me on to comment on stuff. And then literally like a couple days later, that Galinowitz thing went down. And so I did a lot of WGN TV for that. And then
You and I ran into each other at the Irish
Heritage Center. I saw you. And then I don't remember... I can't recall how I started going out and appearing on a Rose Show, and I think we met at a Sox game or something.
Oh, that'll do it.
And so
We were talking about cops, you know, training and practicing. The 630 says, can a CPD just go in and shoot a half box of full? They can go practice whenever they want.
Absolutely.
Can't they? Yeah.
But see, yeah, they can, but that's on their own time and on their own dime. You know, I was fortunate to be in federal law enforcement where, you know, we were given X amount of ammunition to practice on our own per year,
right.
and then we would have full days of training. I mean, like I say, we'd put thousands of rounds of ammunition through a handgun a year, and rifles and shotguns and all that kind of stuff. So the better train, the better you're going to react during a situation.
Well, that's definitely the case. And, what were your thoughts about Lori Lightfoot's proposal? I believe it was while she was running. We haven't talked about it this week, but about using some of the schools that were closed down as training facilities.
I mean, better than being vacant, I suppose. But, right. Again, there's so much training other than just, you know, shooting your handgun that officers should be and need to be going through to make themselves, you know, a better officer. So it's like any profession. You know, doctors train all the time, constantly.
Yeah. Keep practice. How do you practice, Scott?
He's drawing. I see him drawing now.
Yeah, I'm drawing now. Just always keep the hand moving, man.
So your latest is today the, because they've extended the timeline for
again.
Brexit. For Brexit, they're extending it to October?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. How hard can this be? We're leaving. Well, what about that border on Ireland? Well, we'll keep it the same. Okay. Done.
But I don't think they can if they leave.
You can negotiate anything. I mean,
yeah, they're having a tough time doing that.
Oh, do you think? And my son and his wife live and work there currently. Mm. So I'm in England, and I'm like, this is not good news for us as a family. because my daughter-in-law, she's a postdoc position at the University of Bournemouth in the south of England, and it's entirely underwritten by a grant from, say it with me, kids, the EU.
Mm. See?
Yeah, so she was hoping for another round, and that may or may not happen because they won't be in the EU.
Oh, boy.
Yeah. So this is actually hits home. This is personal. That's why the terrorists pissed me off, because my youngest son is a welder, and the steel tariffs have doubled and tripled their costs now. So, mm-hmm. You know, so I'm just a big ball.
Did you say terrorist or tariffs?
Tariffs.
Tariffs.
I thought he said terrorists. I was. Did
I
you
did
think,
too. And I'm like, what do they have to do with welding?
No, terrorists.
Did you think he's a terrorist?
For a second, yes. I'm not going to lie.
Okay.
Did I say terrorists?
I think you did.
Oh my God, I'm having a stroke.
John and I are like, there's a lot of reasons to hate the terrorists. I don't know why it's just the tariff.
The terrorists. Well, the steel terrorists.
I'm like,
the tariffs on the terrorists.
I was trying to click that all into place.
Oh my God.
Like the terrorists, the welding. Like I guess because they had to build stuff after they blow it up. I don't know what is happening.
Oh, yeah, no. Well,
Trump, I thought I was having a stroke.
Trump has placed tariffs on the terror.
Wow, did I really? Wow.
It's part of the border security.
Or my enunciation was terrible.
That's okay. And maybe nobody else heard it, but the three of us in the room, maybe.
That makes me feel
like,
so much
like
better.
Tariffs. Tariffs. The taxes, I guess.
The tariffs against the, the steel industry. So that's all personal.
What this week is... What this week have you, because last week we talked a little bit about Joe Biden, and man, there's still more stories coming out about how he's not getting a good break, and he's just a touchy-feely kind of guy.
You have taught me so much over the years. You have, and it's been remarkable. It really has, about just women's reaction to things that I just thought guys being guys, dudes being dudes, mm-hmm. and you're like, no, that's it's and then just, I'm turning it around, and you're going, yeah, that would suck.
That would suck. But I also think that as long as we're having the conversation, and as long as we learn from it, including former Vice President Joe Biden, it's the conversation to have. I don't know if it disqualifies him for running for the presidency, but it's a weird thing.
I think as a Democrat in 2012, a 77-year-old guy who comes up was a corporatist, has been kind of a shill for corporations coming from Delaware. I don't know that he's really going to appeal to the more progressive wing of that party right now.
Well, and that's how many candidates are there now? 24?
It just came out to like 18 or 19 today. Some congressman from California. You're going, I think you're the only Democrat I know who's not running for president. are you?
No, oh, hold on a second.
Yes.
More after this on 720 WGN.
Vasquez.
Vasquez. Every week, we like to catch up with Scott Stantis and find out what's grabbing his attention as he draws his cartoons for the Chicago Tribune. He is the political cartoonist for the Chicago Tribune and member of the editorial board. Hanging out with us tonight, writing Sidecar, is John O'Malley, former U.S. Marshal, Chief Deputy of the Northern District, and law enforcement expert contributor here at WGN Radio. You're listening to the Patty Vasquez Show. And we've got Vic Vaughn in the newsroom. We've got Vivian behind the glass in the producer's booth. That sounds weird to say.
Behind the glass.
I know. We're divided by that glass.
I know.
Hi.
How's it going?
And are you with us tomorrow night as well?
I sure am.
We're going to talk about the series Catastrophe. I don't know if you've seen that on Netflix. No, on Amazon Prime.
I have not.
It's a pretty good one. I don't know if you'd like it, Scott. If you don't, I'm kidding. Maybe you will.
I'm just grumpy. What? I don't like anything, apparently.
Then, no, you do. You do. You're very passionate about not only the...
Pretty much everything.
Yeah. Very passionate.
I am.
Everything?
It's weird. Pretty much. It's weird.
We used to go stair climbing. Scott and I... Scott helped me train for the very first Fight for Air Climb.
Yeah.
And his building has...
51.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So we would... But what was great about doing it in your building was that we would do like 10 or 20 and then walk down the hall to the other stairwell.
Gasping.
I needed to take some breaks because I ended up doing all four towers that first year.
Yeah, oh, wow. You kicked ass. Wow. I mean, you did.
Well, it's because of your building. It helped a lot. So that was how we bonded, was stair climbing.
Yes.
We did. We used to have so much fun.
We started in the Tribune Tower. And that,
so much
but
fun.
When they were doing the, when they were doing, what the hell were they doing on one of the floors? And so we're breathing in God
yeah.
knows what.
All kinds of asbestos,
90-year-old asbestos.
Mm. I feel fine.
Yeah. Well, I'm training for it to go rim to rim in the Grand Canyon next month.
And I so can't I'm, believe you're doing that.
Wow.
I know. It's really stupid.
Have you ever hiked in the Grand Canyon, Vivian?
Never. Just the as far as I've gotten is the Hollywood sign. And that was... Let me tell you, that was a hike. Never again.
How about you, John? Have you ever?
Just in Colorado, but didn't the Brady kids get lost in the Grand Canyon?
Yes, they did. But they had the flashlight with the hot dogs and pork and beans. Remember that? And the Native American kid helped.
That's right. He came along. Yeah. Thank goodness.
Well, thank God those Native American kids.
Yeah, you cannot go to the Grand Canyon or to Hawaii or to a theme park with the Brady Bunch because all mayhem.
Right, just, Hawaii, bad, Greg.
Yeah, they got the bad luck, the bad juju from, I can't remember why, I just remember there being a tarantula and something fell off the wall. And
what'd they do? They screwed up something. They touched something or they did something to get the spirits.
Yeah, they were cursed.
Scott,
you're looking at us like we're crazy.
No, I'm totally.
Did you watch the Brady Bunch?
Yeah, do you know your Brady Bunch?
Yes, I don't know that though. TV must have been on the fritz that week.
It was somewhere after Mom always said, "Don't play ball in the house," and pork chops and applesauce. I think it was after that.
Yeah, it's probably when it jumped the shark when Greg was surfing and he got injured.
Right. Yeah. I remember the Hawaii thing. I don't remember the Grand Canyon.
You don't remember the Grand Canyon?
I have to look that up.
And they also were at a theme park. They lose their dad's, Mr. Brady's.
The drawings.
The drawings.
Yeah.
It's in a tube and it ends up being in the tube with a poster instead of, oh my gosh.
There was no PDFs back then.
I saw way too much of the Brady Bunch.
Wow, you really did.
Best show ever.
Best show ever, really?
Totally.
I so want... Oh, you know what? This is actually before we talk about more headlines. So I meant to talk about this earlier in the show, but we had such great conversations about a lot of other topics. Nick D did a great job talking about National Siblings Day on was it Wednesday? Because today's Friday now, so it would have been Wednesday. I don't know. Yesterday to me. But really great conversation about National Sibling Day. And they also talked about siblings on television. But what was interesting is that he is an only child, and today, now Friday, is National Only Child Day, which is weird that there's a day in between. So Wednesday was National Sibling Day, nothing on Thursday. So like the only children get separated from everything anyway. They don't even get, I know, I'm just saying. But I grew up as an only child because all my siblings were half siblings. And my Facebook post was sibling status. It's complicated.
Oh, that's what that meant. Okay. I was wondering what that was.
It is. It's complicated because I can't say I'm an only child because I have altogether six brothers and sisters.
Wow.
From my mother had three children before she met my father, and my dad had three children before he met my mom.
That's the Brady Bunch.
I'm Oliver.
And you're Oliver.
You're sort of Alice.
Here's the thing. No. My siblings never met each other until my wedding. They were all 11 to 21 years older.
Oh, wow.
Than me.
Wow.
So there was no relationship. And so a lot of, and I also think, you know, my family was struggled with a lot of, there was addiction, there was tragedy that really affected everybody deeply. And it was very hard to sort of develop relationships.
Yeah.
My dad and his ex did not have a great relationship. So I just wanted to put it out there for those of you who might be estranged from your siblings. I feel you. So
what day is that? That's Saturday.
That's funny.
No, actually, April, day, so it'd be Sunday.
Is it Strange Sibling Day?
April 11th actually was National Pet Day.
Okay.
So that's in between.
In between.
So that's something.
Siblings, pet pets, only children.
There you go.
Yeah. Okay, that whole
and you, a full week.
Yeah. But it was interesting to watch the whole feed fill up. And I think you posted a picture with your brother.
I did. I have three sisters.
Three sisters.
I didn't. I think you I did last year, though. I
was trying to remember all the people that like showed great pictures of their childhood with their siblings.
Yeah.
I wish I'd known about it before.
Next year. You got a year to plan.
Okay.
Yeah.
I'll make sure it's like
put make a reminder.
Yeah, there you go. So one year I was showing Steve, my husband, the and he does exist.
Sure,
so.
Why not? Let's go with that.
Scott, have you still never met him?
No.
Oh. You know who wants to talk to you? It's Griffin. Griffin wants to have a political conversation with you.
Oh, okay.
He just wants to know where you stand in this current climate.
Love
of
to.
Conversation.
I can't. I just got congratulated for not being a crazy conservative, but like thoughtful. So that was kind of a pleasant surprise by nationalists. A guy who writes a column for gocomics.com and just talks about, and he's asked, are there any like conservatives who aren't, you know, have lost their minds? He mentioned me, so
there you go.
He doesn't know me well.
So you're one of your latest cartoons is they've found the black hole, right?
Yes, it's Springfield. And it's just going to get bigger after the tax increase.
Progressive tax. It'll be a tax increase.
The fair tax.
So you're not a fan of that?
You know what? Okay, here's the thing. This is a here's why I don't like it. Because I had a friend call me the next morning and say, what's wrong with progressive taxes? I go, they're okay under the right circumstances. Prove to me that in Springfield is actually trying to get its fiscal house in order, that you're trying to get spending under control. Don't tell me that we're bare bones spending here. Horse hockey. It's not true. Cut your spending. Prove to me that, you know, you're being responsible with my money. And then... but let's talk about tax increase. You can have more.
They can have more. Oh, I see.
Makes sense.
How do you feel about opening up the Constitution in order to change it for the fair tax?
You have to do that. I think opening up the Constitution to get rid of the ridiculous pension protections. I mean, there's a lot that needs to be fixed.
Well, and we had this conversation. Again, The Mincing Rascals is available on WGNradio.com.
I'm sorry, who was the Scott this week?
I don't know. I mean, Justin, I think, had a lot of coffee. And was very passionate about all the topics. So you'll hear this noise from me. But there's a lot of that sound because at one point Steve Bertrand and Justin were going across. They were talking about opening the Constitution. Justin thinks it's very dangerous, and if you're going to do that, you know, don't be disingenuous about your reasons for doing it. Is it really for the fair tax, or is it to change the pensions? And if it's going to be that, say that it's that. And then Bertrand, I'm not going to reenact the whole thing, but it was a lot. My head, I was ping ponging. I was like, can I? Nobody? All right, then fine. And there comes a point where everyone says what you wanted to say, and then you're like, and then you sound like you have nothing to say. And I'm like, they covered it.
Yeah, what they said, what Zorn said,
what those guys,
which I never say.
What those guys say. Well, and I don't want to go in and take away things that were promised. I mean, the problem was not, and this was covered by everybody that I wanted to say, was that the problem isn't necessarily the promise. It was how we manage the funds. For decades, we were borrowing against pensions like it was a credit card, and nobody read the fine print as what that meant to push that down the field.
Well, listen, I hate to get political, but pensions, you know, you have a lot of policemen and firemen in the city of Chicago and elsewhere that are living. My father is one of them. He's 91. He retired from the police department in the 80s, right? Yeah. And his two brothers and these guys, you know, years ago, these guys would work a city job or a state job and, you know, they didn't live very long. Now they're living forever, and there's lots of them, and they're still collecting these pensions. And then there's, you know, like that one guy that was a substitute teacher for about 15 minutes. And
yeah.
You know, so there's problems. Absolutely.
No, and I think what Patty touched on is that you made a promise to people and you can't break it. It's a contract.
Right.
But going forward, you can absolutely change it. And
sure.
The state's in terrible fiscal shape. And
oh, God, yeah.
A click or two above junk bond. I mean, the city of Chicago is one click above. CPS is below junk bond rating. I mean, you know, when CPS floated those bonds 6 months ago at 18% and no one bought them because they're rated, because that's too big of a risk.
Yeah.
You know, those are not sexy issues, but they're important issues.
They are. What were your thoughts on the vote for the Lincoln Yards and the concessions that the Sterling Bay company made?
I think Mayor-elect Lightfoot did a, you know what, they held out. For some changes. They got some changes. Mm-hmm. It's what compromise is all about. And then they signed off on it. I think it was a good political move. And I happen to like the idea of Lincoln Yards. And I like the idea that people can do what they want with their
I
property.
I really needed you to be there this morning because Justin was like, it's too big. He like, why is it to be so big? But my husband was saying afterwards, you know, we were talking about it. And it's like, well, what are you going to do? You have to tear up the whole area. You're going to half-ass it? I mean, you know, go in.
Yeah, go
make
big
no,
or go home.
Go make no small
make
plans.
No small plans.
Thank
right.
you.
City of Chicago was built on that, right?
And our friend Adam Seltzer found that he Burnham actually did say that in a speech in London, right?
Oh, that's right. He found the citation
I
in the newspaper.
I love Adam so much. That guy's amazing.
Well, I'll see if he can come in next week.
Okay.
All right, then.
We've taken like five of his tours lately.
Oh, that's amazing.
Yeah, everyone from out of town because he's just this incredible guy. He last one, we did the graveyard tour, and then he went out to brunch with us.
Oh, that's yeah. Adam Seltzer is a local historian. He's an author. He's written like 23 different books.
Yeah.
And he does not only the like architectural tours, he does like ghost tours. He does he teaches a class in grave digging. Not really. He doesn't encourage you to obviously, you know, desecrate a grave. That would be horrible. But if you were, he talks about like from the turn of the century in the 1900s, the way they would do it. Yeah.
Anyway, he's amazing. So
I think I've heard him he's been on your show.
He's a regular.
Yeah, I've heard him.
Yeah, I told him many times. By the way, the 773 says it was some kind of pendant in Hawaii on the Brady Bunch episode.
That's right. Right. Was it around his neck? Yeah, he was wearing it around.
Yeah.
And when it comes off, that's when he starts to have the bad luck? Is it because he leaves?
I think so. I'm blaming Jan. Jan had something
poor
to do with it.
Jan.
Marsha. See, I know.
I used to have a band called the George Glass Band. I kid you not.
Oh, really?
Mm-hmm. Would still be going if the one guy didn't move to Arizona, but.
Oh, man. Yep. Ruining it for everybody.
The George Glass Band.
When we come back, do you guys want to do... I was asked by Vivian at the beginning of the show if she had to participate and tell me something good. And one of the other things that we've been doing, Vivian, is tell me with kind words, like something that someone has done to you, the kindest thing someone has done or said to you.
Yeah.
And does it help? Is that better than tell me something good? It's kind of the same thing.
It's kind of the same thing.
It is. It doesn't have to be today. Just across the span of your life, like maybe someone just let you into traffic when they didn't have to.
Let's do it.
Let you merge. All right, with kind words.
This is a good song. Tell me something good.
But we can still play Tell Me Something Good for the song underneath because it's the same thing. More in a moment on 720 WGN.
I'm feeling
approve of your musical choice, Vivian.
I thought so.
We want to feel good. You had a long day. Do you want to tell us first why it was kind of a crappy day or just a general feeling?
It wasn't a crappy, like, it wasn't like a crappy day. It was just like a lot of things that just kind of happened all in one day, you know?
Everything was misaligned?
Yeah. You know, like it's my sleeping schedule has been off for like the past couple of days, you know?
Well, we're not helping with this show, sorry.
I know. Definitely a very challenging day.
It's been extraordinary to work with you tonight. I know that we've had a lot of conversation. And I'm saying this on the air, just to let you know, when you want to jump in, you don't always have to wait. I know that's
absolutely.
Something I need to make sure that producers know that.
But you also need to know that back here, it's like, oh, let me do this. Oh, I got to do that.
I know you are.
Saying,
but so, I don't want you to also feel like, oh, you know, you just jump in. It's your conversation too. It's all good. So with kind words, you know, there's, you know, so many things happen through the course of the day, and it's always nice to reflect on a kindness someone has shown you or said to you. And by the way, the 301 says, was Vincent Price in that Brady Bunch episode? Was Vincent Price in the episode
of the Hawaii one?
I don't know. So.
I don't know.
Nick would know that.
Did you? But their kindness can come in like in small ways too that just make you feel better. And if you remember them, it helps you and inspires you to maybe do something kind or say something kind to someone else. And this is the silliest thing, but have you ever been at an intersection where the cross traffic is so bad you're like, I'm just going to live here. I am never going to be able to move. And not one but two cars in each direction like saw me wait, like, you know, they held back so that I could make the left turn, because there are times you cannot make a left turn. And for two drivers to realize someone was trying to get in, because everyone just is, yeah, just they, oh, you know, God, they don't even care, they just bunch up, they want to get to the car in front of them. And so thank you to that driver who will never know that I'm thanking them, because they're both those drivers. So that's my something kind today, that I was able to make the left turn.
Aww. That's awesome.
Onto Lawrence Avenue. Over by Dare, over by the Copernicus.
Over by Dare, that's by, yeah, I live right over there.
Yeah, I take a shortcut a lot. the street where the Copernicus Center is and the Jefferson Park, the office building.
Yep.
Yeah, behind there.
Mm-hmm. It's kind of pothole-y, but that's okay.
Yeah, but you gotta commit to knowing that you might live there, because the cross traffic doesn't stop. Except for today, they did. How about you, Scott? Do you want to tell, was it with kind words?
I'm going to say something good, though. It's, yeah, kind words, because, you know, I'm a space geek. Mm. And the wonders of our universe, and it's just the glory of it all, is spectacular. And this week, human beings, for the first time in our history as a species, we didn't even know black holes existed a generation ago. We had the math, but we never knew they existed. Then we found that they did exist. And this week we've seen a photograph of it. And think what a magnificent gift that is to all of us, that something 55 million light years away, this thing, we now have seen what it looks like. We've seen the impossible.
Where is the because I don't keep up with all of this, so walk me through this a little bit. Yeah. Where do we have the equipment that was able to...
It was a number of telescopes that put the data together, mm-hmm, and they show the glow around... And you literally see, no surprise, a black hole. A black hole is a star that's collapsed, and the gravity is so intense that even light can't escape from it. That's what a black hole is. And now we've seen it. We've seen it. Human beings have seen a black hole. Meditate on that for a moment, and it's a remarkable thing.
All right. I have to keep talking, so I'll meditate after the show.
Okay.
For a few minutes.
You can... Don't...
So, John, do you want to... Oh, is Chris... Is that for us, or is that for the other show? Does Chris want to share with kind words?
He wants to share something.
Oh, hey, nice. Excellent. Hey, Chris, how are you doing?
I'm fine. How are you doing?
Doing all right. How are you doing down in South Carolina?
Doing good. Hanging in there.
What do you want to tell us?
I just want to say that I'm an only child on my mom's side. It's National Only Children Day.
Happy Only Child's Day.
Yeah, you were only child.
I was. How would you describe what I am?
Well, he just said it. He says he's an only child on his mother's side.
I'm an only child because none of my siblings had both my parents.
So that's, oh, yeah. Yeah.
It's complicated.
Sister from the same mister, or what?
Yeah, you know, yeah. My two sisters and my brother on one side from my dad, and my two sisters and a brother from my mom's side. So nobody, my parents only had me together. See, none of it makes sense. I need
that
a graph,
totally.
Chris. You know what my
you know some famous only children?
Who?
That's like celebrities. I can tell you a few.
I know Nick was telling the audience about it last night. Do you want to give me a couple?
You know, like, I could tell you some only children that's in Hollywood.
Yeah.
That's in the industry. You know, Brooke Shields, Drew Barrymore, Samuel L. Jackson, Candace Bergen.
You know, a lot of them.
That's nicer.
Yeah. It makes us feel better.
I wish them all happy Only Children Day.
It makes us feel less alone. Oh, thank you so much for that, Chris.
Thank you so much, Patty. Right. Keep in touch.
You too. My sister Bonnie would say, she would tell people, she'd introduce me to them, and she'd be like, this is Patty. She's my, what are we again? She's like, are we stepsisters, or are we half sisters, or are we
just say sisters?
Just say sisters.
Well, and I said that I told her. So the joke that I wrote was that, you know, look, when we're just out together, we're just sisters, you know. But if you need a liver transplant, we are stepsisters.
That's a good one.
It was rough. Like growing, like she. I remember she. So she's Irish and German, and she called me one day, and she was really upset because her daughter was dating a Mexican, and she goes, I've been through this once before with Dad and your mom. And I was like,
wow. Bonnie sounds like a trip.
She's a hoot. Yeah. So my niece Rebecca married a Mexican guy, and she
My brother-in-law said, I'm not letting any Mexicans in this house. And Becky was like, you mean like Aunt Patty? So it's fun. I had a,
oh my God.
I went the other way with kind words. We went the wrong way.
Yeah, you did.
I'm fine. My therapist says I'm remarkably well-adjusted. The 779 wants to know where the black hole is besides my family. Where is the black hole? Where is it?
I can't tell you exactly where. I can't tell you what constellation you can find it out. It's 55. I know it's 55 million light years away. I can't tell you exactly where in the sky you won't see it because, you know, it's a black hole.
I'm guessing if you Google black hole, you'll find photos.
You don't have to Google it. It was on the front page of every newspaper.
Yeah, there was
but that
a
won't be as good as digital. By your newspaper. I didn't mean to dissuade people from buying
good
the newspaper.
Lord, man. There's like 10 of them left in the world.
John, do you want to tell us something good?
Yeah, you know what? Last week, I sit on the board of an organization called Sky Art Chicago, which, Patty, you should come see. It's does a lot of art for underprivileged kids, and we had a pop-up art show right on Elston.
Oh, cool.
Right across from Chief O'Neill's.
Excellent.
And we had a really good turnout. People came and were really amazed to hear what great things
Sky Art... What's it called again, please?
Sky Art Chicago.
Sky Art.
It's
Thank
at
you.
91st and Commercial is where the studio, the main place is, so... Good
Vivian,
stuff.
Did you think of one before we go?
I actually did not have any cash on me, and I saw a homeless man, and I just rolled down my window, and I said, I'm sorry, I don't have anything, but he looked at me, he said, thank you for even acknowledging me.
Aww,
and that was more than enough for me. I was like, I'm sorry, but, you know, next time I'll definitely remember to, you know, bring you a water or a banana or something.
You owe him $20.
Thanks for the kindness.
Yes.
Quick break and then the news, and then turn it over to Nick D.